Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Hope you guys have been enjoying the last handful of episodes. Been having some, some killer guests. This shit, the amount of episodes we have backlogged right now, too, of just killer conversations. I wish we could drop them all in one day, but I mean, we just knocked out a few more with my buddy Max Winkler, Henry Winkler's son, who's a big Hollywood director, my boy Scotty Landis, who, writes on Workaholics and created House Party with our boy Adam Devine, Kira Sultanovich, Kelsey Cook, a long list, and so many great guests in the fire right now that that I want to announce, but I don't want to jinx it. So just continue to subscribe on iTunes, tell your friends, give us a 5-star rating, and comment on the iTunes page. Again, that helps us climb the charts. Appreciate all you guys' support and Twitters and emails and... You know, you do that, and you could be fan of the week and win some free merch. Had a great weekend. Hope you guys did, too. I just got back from Santa Barbara. I went up there with my boy Mark Saratella and did a show at UCSB. Thanks, everybody, that came out. And thank you to Adam Devine and his girlfriend Chloe. They came up just to take a little, you know, small little vacay. We stayed up there for the night, and then Adam went on after me and did about 40 minutes and just... gave the kids what they wanted. It was amazing. It was a great time. Santa Barbara's the shit. If you ever have a chance to go. Went to the beach. Smoked a joint on the beach. Tossed around the football. Chatted. Giggled. It was a great time. You need those getaways every now and then. And I don't do that enough. I don't hang out enough. I don't get away enough. It was great. Today's episode, man, no joke, this episode has maybe the hardest Brad and I have laughed together with a guest. Our guest is Jesse Joyce, one of the funniest comics working. He writes for all the Comedy Central roasts. He writes for At Midnight. You've seen him on Late Night, I think with Ferguson and Conan. And he's just one of the sharpest and coolest dudes in the biz. I met Jesse Joyce when I hosted for Greg Giraldo about when I was 3 years into stand-up, and Jesse was featuring, and Jesse was writing for Greg and writing for him on the roast. And Greg Giraldo, obviously, you know, he was one of the best comics in the game, one of the sharpest minds. Had passed away at the age of 44, which was, so devastating. Not only to myself and the comedy world, but he was one of Jesse's best friends. And we talked very positively about Greg a lot in this episode, which was really great because he was a hero of mine. And it was incredible to really get into that and hear their backstory and how they met. Jesse has some amazing stories from his time on the road. One story in particular that I think... was so funny that I think we're going to have it animated because it was that great. His start on the East Coast with comedy, he's, you know, married, so we shed some light on that for Brad and I. It's just a great episode. A lot of laughs. Jesse's a fucking sniper with comedy and jokes, and you're going to love this episode from top to bottom. So follow Jesse on Twitter, at Jesse Joyce. Follow me on Twitter, at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter, at Funny Brad. And go see Brad, well, first of all, on Showtime. His special Daddy Issues premiered last weekend, and it's hilarious. Go check it out on Showtime, Daddy Issues Brad Williams. And then go see Brad this weekend in Naples, Florida at Off the Hook Comedy Club. Brad Williams, Naples, Florida, Off the Hook Comedy Club, May 26th and 27th. And then in Brea, Brad will be in Brea, hometown shows, June 2nd through the 4th in Brea, California. Go see Brad at the Brea Improv. This week, I'm supposed to be in Vegas tonight through Sunday, but I have some jobs. I'm doing a little part in a Jeff Garland Netflix movie and another show, and I can't make it until Thursday. So I am not in Vegas at the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana Casino until Thursday. I will be there Thursday, May 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th. I will be in Vegas the 26th through the 29th. Laugh Factory, Tropicana. Come see me in Vegas and come party. It's Memorial Day weekend. AdamRayTV.com. for those tickets. And then next weekend, I will be in San Diego at American Comedy Company, June 3rd through the 5th, headlining the American Comedy Company in San Diego, June 3rd through the 5th. Get your tickets at AdamRayTV.com or AmericanComedyCompany.com. And, of course, bring your merch, your shirts, your hats, your mugs. Get all that merch at EstoyMerchandise.com, ESTOYMerchandise.com. Brad and I just took a bunch of promo pics with our friend Nicole. Holy shit, we took some amazing promo pics that we're going to add to the merch store in the next couple of weeks, and you guys are going to lose your fucking minds. I can't even tell you. I posted a few previews on my Instagram, which you can see at AdamRay33, and they're going to be available soon, and I know you guys are going to eat them up. They're amazing. Really quickly, I have to mention, at the very end of the episode, like the last minute of the episode, we had a glitch, and it stopped recording. Luckily, it didn't delete the episode, but I had to record the last minute of the episode on my phone. I pulled it out real quick. My phone, you perverts, and recorded the last minute. So if you hear it a little distorted, that's why it sounds like that. I did not want to stop the episode and lose the organic moment that was happening between Brad and Jesse. And so you get a little iPhone action at the end for the last minute. So don't let that throw you off. Follow the podcast on Twitter at ALN Podcast. Follow Brad on Instagram at Brad Williams Comic. Follow the podcast on Instagram at ALN Podcast. Continue to subscribe on iTunes and tell your friends. Separation Anxiety, brand new episode tomorrow, TBS, 10 p.m. And shit, I think that's it. Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles. That's all the merch info. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with our buddy, Jesse Joyce.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. It's about last night.
Adam, your apartment has hit a new low.
What? Plugging in vape pens?
Someone is plugging in their vape pen.
I don't know. Is that embarrassing, or is the amount of candles a straight man in his 30s has visibly out and all lit?
Yeah,
let's put this back on me. You're the guest.
Hey, like, that's a nice touch, fellas. You set up the microphones, but did you bring me over here to fuck me? What's going on?
Well, Brad says all the time, like, he'll come over sometimes I'm setting up and I'll have on some music. And sometimes it's a TLC Pandora station. And sometimes Digging on You will be playing. And
sometimes he's rubbing oil on himself.
These are all sometimes happenings.
Well, are you sure have you ever actually caught him rubbing oil? Because they're a greasy people, the Italians.
I'm Russian Jew.
What? You're not a Dago? How is that possible?
I don't know. I was fooled too.
Wow.
Well, everyone thinks I'm from New York, and after a while, I just start saying like Brooklyn, Seattle.
Oh, okay. Because you're from Seattle.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know what, and it's like, I don't know, man. And I don't even think whatever I sound like is East Coasty, but I think it's, people told me it's like the way I carry myself and then like the dark hair and the like.
Lack of a soul.
Really? But I'm not as like brass. You live in New York forever.
Even
so you
just
know.
Like the way you like people say, like the way people, the way people say about me. You know, like it couldn't
that
sound.
Doesn't br- that doesn't
you sound like fucking Donnie Brasco. Like there's no way. That you're not
I should
actually...
start telling people that like I lived in New York when I was like a baby, but then moved to Seattle. But my first words were like "goo goo gaga."
You really have like a witness protection vibe to you. You know, like the how viciously you deny that you're not an Italian from New York.
I'm a Russian Jew from
fucking Seattle.
Oh my God.
I'm from Seattle over here. Grew up, born and raised.
Gary Payton, Detlef Schrempf.
Go Seahawks. I don't follow the Yankees at all.
Yes.
I don't know how I just became dice right there, but I did.
No, it's totally, it works.
But that's where it's headed.
Because he fucking testified against the guy who ran numbers for when he was a 9-year-old. They had to put him in the program and he ended up in Seattle.
I mean, hey, that's a great movie.
And you know, he does wear a Mariner's hat wherever he goes.
Oh, you're right. I have seen you in a Mariner's hat.
So I think
I'm not overcompensating. So I have a lot of pride in a team that's struggling.
He's just hey, in case you were wondering, Seattle, that's where I'm from.
That's so funny.
Bubbing, ringing.
Bubbing, a staple Seattle phrase.
Yeah. I'll be up in the Pacific Northwest. Whenever we get something good, we go bada-bing right there. All right,
look,
right?
Both of you need to stop this abuse, or I'll end this pod 45 minutes early.
I was sure.
No.
I just wanted to make a greasy joke. That's how this whole thing started. I'm sure the Russian Jews are pretty greasy anyway.
I think so.
I'm sure you're...
Yeah, and I think
a greasy gypsy type more than.
I mean, we're not that. I mean, you know, Harry. I feel like I don't got the back hair, which I'm happy about.
Right.
I know it's probably coming, but I had a roommate who had back hair, and he would have to get it lasered off. And if he didn't, it literally I remember one time he was like, "I'm going to get it lasered," and I was like, "Cool, man. Nobody asked you. Just brought that up unprovoked. So this is probably another reason why we should separate soon." And then he goes, "I go, why do you need? Is it that bad?" He pulled up his shirt. I've never seen a hairier. Human
head.
It was insane. I didn't know that the body could produce that much.
I feel like it's better to be hairless, you know,
for sure.
Because I mean, I'm a pretty hairless dude, so I've always envied the ability to grow a beard. I'm incapable
of doing
a beard.
Has that goatee taken a while?
Yeah, well, the goatee, yeah, I've been doing this since we last saw each other, the two of us, three of us, in Austin. I've been doing this since then, so it's been like 2 weeks.
It seems well groomed, it also seems at a good length.
Yeah, it's fine, but I can't make it a beard if I wanted to. Like, that's a fucking good beard, you know?
And you
seem like you're capable. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I would rather be like, than err on the side of ending up having, like, fucking
of course.
Gypsy werewolf.
Less is more.
Shoulders.
Right now, you have the beard of a guy that's, like, debating opening up a karate studio or a startup in a startup in Silicon Valley. Like, no, this is what dudes have, right?
Yeah.
Like
a chef who lost his job 3 years ago. That's what it seemed like.
You know? White sushi chef.
Yeah, exactly.
To be extremely specific. Mm-hmm. No, I trained under Guy Fieri.
By the way, this is just water, and this is for me, correct?
Yeah, it's all you, baby. All
right, cool. Because I just realized, I'm a sober guy. I should probably check what bottle I half-heartedly just opened.
No, I know that about you.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened? Have you ever,
Once or twice. Just spit it right out. Because, you could tell right away. But, it's never been, it's a kind of a cartoonish thing that people who aren't sober think about a sober person, it's cute. Like, it never bothers me.
Right.
But people get real overprotective about it. You know,
oh, sure.
I'll go to, actually, my ex-wife, one time when we first started dating, I found this very endearing about my ex-wife, who I'm no longer married to. But that's the nature of ex-wife. But the point is,
I
was moving her drink, and she saw me pick it up and assumed that I was going to just guzzle it for some, and she slapped it out of my hand and smashed her vodka cranberry against the wall, just because she was like, "Don't!" Like I was gonna just slam it because there's you're right. And
she
then
was
I was
somebody,
like,
she was like jumping like a slow motion, ending of an 80s movie where it's like, no.
Yeah, exactly. Like they were taking a bullet for the president. I've had a dozen people do that before.
By the way, people who are just listening couldn't see how great seeing Brad try to slow-mo remove himself out of his chair is.
I acted it out.
Yeah, you did. He really did. He committed.
I go full. Superman pose when that happens.
Yeah, it was Tito.
Okay, so people do get very...
People, I'm just trying to be like, oh, this is going to fall. I'm going to move. And people are slapping drinks out of my hand.
How do you...
I'm gonna it begins, you know, and
how many years sober?
Almost 11 now.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
And are you a guy where, or is this the fear that people have where if you do take vodka and think it's water and have one sip, it's like, oh man, it's over now. Like that one sip is going to
the
edge.
Yeah. I don't think a sip of it, it's not a good thing to do. They are right to be, but it takes out of the equation that why would I relapse right this second with you two? You know, for example.
We're playing Jenga at a dinner party.
Yeah, exactly.
Why would I choose this moment?
This is not the scenario in which I will throw 11 years of sobriety in the shitty.
If you're going to fall back off the wagon, you're going to have it orchestrated.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a big bonanza.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it'll be a fucking full-on blowout.
But. Yeah, it's going to be Vegas. There's going to be a dramatic event beforehand.
I would never, whenever I was drinking, I would have to plan way in advance. I'd have to have like at least a backup bottle of whatever I was drinking to make sure there'd be. So it's like, I'm not going to relapse on a sip of your fucking gin and tonic. That's insane. Like, that's not enough for me. That would just make me angry, you know?
Now, if you have a gallon of whiskey.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, if there was like, what, oh, those jug handled ones. Oh, man, I love those. With the ones with the handle.
Those are your favorite?
Because I knew that there would be enough in there, you know? Like,
gotcha.
Just a regular fifth.
Wasn't enough.
Wouldn't be enough. Like, because.
At first it was.
Yeah, but I would see that and it would annoy me. Like, I'd be like, oh, fuck, I don't know if I'm, like, because what the worst case scenario for me would be finish the bottle and still be awake, and then able to get more. And,
so you drank the pass out.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's a salvation mechanism that my body incorporated, yeah. But the jug handle, I knew for sure that my body would stop me from drinking all of it, you know?
Wow.
So, yeah.
Was there one, and we don't have to sit on this too much longer, but I'm curious.
You know what? I didn't even realize until 10 minutes into this that we were talking on the podcast. Yeah. I just thought we were just fucking off here for a second.
Oh, yeah. Right. So do you want to go back and like...
No, whatever. Oh, no, I don't care that we're talking about it. Like, but I realize now, like, there was... You probably had an agenda.
No, we didn't.
Okay,
our agenda is just to hang out.
No, we kind of set up...
great.
We kind of set up a little bit of a map.
But there's the dude who just walked in. That fucking threw me off.
That's a woman.
Yeah, this is the guy who came to fuck me, right? I knew. Yeah. Too many candles.
His gimp costume is in that backpack.
Yeah, right? You can't be riding the bus in your gimp mask.
Wait, is gimp? Are you assuming that's what Jesse's into?
I mean, you know, no, that's what I assume Norm was into.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Norm, okay.
The candles are for me. The gimp mask is for him. So, yeah, that's
I thought somehow he found on a Wikipedia page that Jesse Joyce was into gimp sex. And
But you just brought up a visual. Yeah. That was just hilarious to me of a guy who's like on his way to the S&M club, but he's already wearing the gimp outfit.
Yeah.
Because that's not assuming the S&M club has like lockers or a changing room or something.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just riding the bus in your gimp outfit, like, oh no, this isn't weird. I'm going to an S&M club.
Yeah, and that's really the thing they all bitch about too is like, why don't they put a fucking locker room in here? We all have to show up, you know, like at a furry convention with my dick hanging out. Like, this is.
I had to stop by my mother-in-law's house. She said, oh, I see you're in the area. Like, come on by. And I just had my gimp outfit on, man. It was really awkward.
Furry conventions just made me think of, I mean, you've now been doing stand-up how long?
19 years.
Okay,
dude.
That's incredible. And obviously, so many gigs. Clubs, obviously provide a lot of crazy shit. But did you ever, like, you and Greg going somewhere, or you just on your own, any sort of weird corporate event or, like, furry convention or something that was just like, wow, I never thought I would perform here, but they are paying me.
Never with Greg, but I one time, like the one that I kind of, my go-to worst show ever was at on the back of a flatbed truck.
Oh God.
For 400 prison guards.
Oh my.
In the middle of the afternoon in a field in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
So the pickup
they were drunk as
shit. I'll take shows I never want to do for $1,000.
Yeah, it was like the Pennsylvania State Prison Guard Union or something.
Holy shit.
And I like went to college with a dude as a prison guard. He was like, "Oh, it'd be great. We'll get you to the." And it was like in the early day, like I'd only been doing stand up for like 4 years. And I didn't know any better, you know.
Right.
So I was like, "Oh,
you
yeah, sure."
Yeah, you just want to take a gig.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned this detail, but it was a bullhorn. Like there was no microphone, so I did my jokes standing on the back of a flatbread with a bullhorn like I was running for president in 1914.
Walk into a bar.
Yeah, it was like that. It was like I was running for office or whatever. It was a disaster, and they were drunk as shit, and they all just wanted to play horseshoes, and they were like really annoyed. They were just shouting shit at me. It was a disaster.
By the way, great drunk game.
Yeah.
Horseshoes.
Yeah.
I'm completely inebriated. Right. Let me throw an 8-pound weight in the direction of my friend.
Exactly. Yeah.
What a great drunk rave.
First, let me pound this 5-inch or this fucking 2-foot sharpened stake into the ground.
Wow. Oh, no. We'll play shoot my friend later. First, horseshoes.
Shoot my friend.
Yeah, the ever popular drunk game, shoot my friend.
Hey. Yeah, it was a disaster.
It's funny that how not thought through there are a lot. Like,
oh,
that
dude.
The fact that enough people go, oh, yeah, that'd be a great place to do a show. Like, can you get them?
I think I've coined the triple negative, and it's the best way to say this, to use a triple negative in order. But it is shocking to me what people don't know stand-up isn't good for. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that they would just assume, like, oh, yeah, stand-up would be a fine thing to have here. This is kind of a weird story. I did one time – so I had a friend in college whose sister worked at William Morris,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
an utterly useless connection for me at the time, because I was like a fucking 18-year-old college kid doing stand-up.
Right.
But he was like, well, you know, you guys should go to lunch or whatever. So I went to lunch with her when I got to New York when I was like 20, and it was just like, well, you know, we represent fucking Denzel Washington, so there's not a lot we can do for you, but, you know.
What can you bring to the table?
Good luck. It's good to meet you.
He stopped doing flatbread moving bullhorn shows.
Right. So it was like, but I understood the deal. Yeah. I was like, all right, well, whatever. It's good to meet somebody in the fucking stupid show business. So then 6 months later, I get a call out of the blue from her, and she was like, actually, weirdly enough, we have this gig for you. If you want to do it. And I was like, yeah, whatever, sure. Like, I kind of thought it was like my foot in the door to show business or whatever.
Sure.
And what it was is it was a birthday party. She was the assistant, by the way, to the manager, right?
Okay.
At William Morris. So, like, this manager represented, like, fucking huge, like, you know, Mel Gibson or somebody. You know, like, giant names, right? So
big Jew haters.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, what, Denzel Washington? Is
I take that back.
No, Denzel, please come on the podcast.
No, he loves you. In fact, I remember hearing about that when he did some sort of press junket. They go, what do you think about flight? And he goes, well, first I want to say I love Jews.
Oh, really? Yeah. Out of the blue?
He wanted to get out of the way. Yeah.
Right? No. Wow. Okay. Nice. Good for him.
Anyway,
Point is that so it ends up being it is a birthday party for that woman, the manager. Mm-hmm. For her father, right?
Whoa.
It's her dad's birthday. And then the assistant's like, he said he wanted a comedian. The assistant's like, I know a comedian who would do a shitty birthday party. Like, right. We'll get this guy, right?
You're the dad's thinking like, well, he's a William Morris. I'm going to have Seinfeld show
up
to my
damn
party.
Right? Oh, so they send like a fucking limo from, I'm like 20. It was a big deal. Like, we drive all the way out to Staten Island to do this gig, right? And I feel like I was getting like a grand, like some enormous amount of money for me at the time, right? So I was like very excited about it. And I go and, but we're driving it. It's like a residential neighborhood. And I was like, well, this is weird. Like, I just assumed they rented out like some fucking Elks Lodge or some bullshit, you know, like some, you know. Clan VFW that he was a member of. I don't know what it was. So whatever. So then we get there and we like limo literally pulls into like an old man's home, you know, just like a fucking residential driveway. And I was like, well, this is weird. So you get in there and it's literally just like exactly what you imagine everyone's family party would be like. Just this dumb, like just a fucking shitty living room,
right.
You know, and just like fucking there's like a table with chips and like 2 liter bottles of soda, right?
What? Like a fucking T-ball banquet?
Yeah, yeah. And like a bunch of old people and like those little folding card tables are set up.
Oh,
and
it's,
shit,
like a,
right?
It's like a sad party from a junior high kid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just this lame fucking party. So I go and like I go over to where the TV is and they had a, like a mic plugged into the stereo.
Oh, God.
And they're just like, well, go ahead. Oh, and the deal was is that one of the clients that her dad's a big fan of was coming, and it was going to be a big surprise, right? So, like, I was like, oh, maybe, like, Robert Duvall is showing up or some fucking shit like that. I don't know.
To close it out.
Fucking weird, whatever. So it was, like, this known thing that, like, oh, this guy's coming later. So, you know, just do 20 minutes or whatever. So I go up there, and I'm just eating shit in this living room.
Do you remember any of the material?
Just whatever I had at the time. You know, I was, like, 3 years into stand-up, so, like, not good.
But you're, like, you're a fucking sniper with jokes. So, I mean, like, was that always your – were you always kind of –
Well, I wouldn't still be doing stand-up if, like, the jokes weren't good for the level I was at,
okay,
but not enough to amuse a fucking living room full of World War II vets who, like, got interrupted in their party to have this fucking 20-year-old shithead talk about how hard it is to fucking figure out how to do laundry on your own or whatever bullshit I was doing.
Right. Like, I think I'm a pretty good stand-up, but if you throw me in a room of, like, that, I don't know how
with the knowledge also that like some guy who's a big deal is coming later, you know, like it's like, so this guy's not even the reason, don't pay attention.
All right,
so anyway, so whatever. And then like halfway through, like the grandchildren get into a fight in the other room, they're playing video, and they come running out like in the middle of it, and like they have to stop, like, you know, like, I'm sorry, you're gonna have to stop talking into the microphone, like, you know, so like they can
like
break up these fucking 6-year-olds who are bickering,
settle an argument about Sonic the Hedgehog.
Exactly. Just horseshit like that is going on. This terrible family party. And so I just eat my balls for 15 minutes and then just like, well, happy birthday, old man. You know, thank you for having me or whatever.
Yeah.
And then just this smattering of like old man applause or whatever. Yeah, just like that in a living room. Exactly what it sounded like. And then I go over to like the fucking table with the chips and the 2 liters of soda. And I'm just standing there eating Doritos, just like kind of waiting to get paid. And also half interested to like, well, at least I get to, you know, meet Denzel Washington
or Robert
whoever
Duvall,
the fuck it is, you know, like, so then
Sissy
all of
SpaceX.
A sudden, like it's all exciting, like a phone call, and then shit, like he's here, right? And there's like a car outside, and then this fucking guy comes in who's like this like handler to some dude to make sure, like, you know, like a bodyguard type
service
person.
Make sure there's enough diet, right?
Yeah. So I was like, oh fuck, like this guy, whatever, is a big deal, right? Yeah. So this guy comes in, and then in walks the amazing Kreskin. Do you know who the fuck that guy is?
The
amazing Kreskin?
It sounds like a mascot for a children's cereal.
Yeah, he was a like a close-up magician hypnotist guy in the 60s and 70s who did The Tonight Show a couple times. He did Carson a lot, right?
And the birthday boy fucking loved
and
him.
And it was like he was so excited to see fucking the amazing Kreskin, right? So fucking Kreskin walks in. And he comes over to me.
A lot of swagger,
goes,
right?
Yeah. Oh, dude, he just fucking bursts in his room. And he
magician
goes,
swagger's the worst swagger, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck. Fucking, I fucking hate magicians, by the way. Yeah,
we'll put a pin
that
in
thing.
It. All comics do. We'll come back to that.
Dude. Yeah, but like, all right. Well, anyway. So we'll get back to fucking, so he comes over to me. He goes, and he's old as shit. You know, he's like 70-something or whatever, right? And he comes over to me. He's like, are you the other guy? You the other performer? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, how's the crowd? And I go, what?
Breathing.
What the crowd? It's a fucking living room. It's right there. Like, it's nine old people scattered around a living room. Like, there's no crowd. What the
You're
fuck
like,
are you talking about?
Standing ovation, Kreskin. Yeah. Follow that.
Yeah. And then he goes, he looks in the living room. He's like, okay, all right.
You're like, I'm following Parcheesi.
Yeah,
are
you
kidding me?
Yeah, it's insane. And then he goes, he's like, all right, cool. Is there a green room? And I'm like, green room? What the fuck are you talking about? It's a home. Have you ever
Kreskin.
Been in a person's home? Like, there's a guest bedroom
yeah,
with
a broom closet. Yeah. Over there, you could use. It's
there's the
spacious.
Room with all the fucking coats on the bed. You want to go hang out in there?
That chick
what are you
next
talking
to,
about?
That chick next to the fireplace in the Twister game. Is she with you?
Yeah, but yeah. He fucking like he was treating it like we were at the Palladium or whatever. Like he was just like, yeah. So was the you know like it was the green room. Like you
who
know,
was
like,
here last week? Yeah. The housekeeper, you piece of shit.
What are you talking about? Yeah. So it was really fucking crazy how like he treated this like a real big deal show. It was just so interesting. And then he goes out and just fucking does card tricks and like tells like drops celebrity name drops people from the 70s like Lucille Ball stories and whatever and they
and
thought
destroyed.
It was the fucking greatest thing ever.
Sure.
So anyway, it was a fascinating Kreskin. Experience to kind of like see like to that one moment where our sort of careers met like where I was
on
like
his way down,
yeah on what I was doing
up.
One of my first living room gigs and he was
he's doing his, doing his 22nd last, that
yeah,
week
yeah exactly right. Yeah.
Kind of dope for a minute though that he did like walk in and look at you like and think and go like what's up other performer and not like because he also could have walked in and been like oh, I don't know who that is, and clearly he doesn't do magic, so fuck him.
Right.
Well, but, I think when you're playing a guy's living room, your ego is out the door.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You're not walking in like, I'm the king of the living room circuit. Everyone knows this.
Yeah. I thought this guy only did garages. He's here too?
You're a porch comic.
You didn't do any jokes about relationships, right? Because I have a chunk of jokes about that.
Fucking A.
Anyway, it was a real weird gig.
So magicians. Yeah, why? I mean, your eyes lit up.
Here's the thing: is what really bugs me is most of I like funny, self-aware magicians like Harry Anderson and fucking Penn and Teller and Amazing Jonathan.
Yes.
Like those guys, like the guys who are funny and
they,
aware of it,
and they know it's a trick.
Yeah, and the guys that I loathe are the ones who like. Like sexy magician, like the one who want you to think they're a sorcerer. You know what I mean? And it's like
and the fucking setups to the jokes, like the ancient Mayans believe that the soul could leave your body at one point and then
they really
reappear across the room. Like fuck, shut up.
Yeah, you bought this shit in a store. I don't need to believe you're a fucking wizard. Just do the stupid. And then the thing that annoys me the most is just the practicality of the fact that it's like, well, you wouldn't be booked here if you didn't know where my card was. You know what I'm saying? So like,
oh man,
it's like I gotta pick a fucking card, and then I gotta watch you do 3 minutes of horseshit, just set up nonsense for no fucking reason. Before inevitably, I know you're going to pick the fucking card. Like, just show it to me. You know what I mean? Don't waste my time with 3 minutes of garbage before it's like, all right, great, it's on the ceiling. Whatever, that was the card. Yep, I knew you'd probably figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, because you fucking bought a thing I didn't buy.
Chinese monks once taught me.
God,
you bought a thing I didn't buy.
Yeah,
so.
I spent some time in a monastery in China. No, your trick was made in China. Shut the fuck up.
Shit.
What about David Blaine, though? I mean, is that...
I don't know, whatever. Like, I'm sure it's neato. I just don't give a shit. You know, like, whatever. It's fucking fine. Stay in a box for a week. Who cares? It's not magical.
I hope no one ever describes my comedy as neato.
Yeah, well, it's a neat thing. It's just not, it's not magical. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, great. Stay in a box. Yeah, whatever.
It's
fine.
It's cool what,
like,
you did, but...
Congratulations. You didn't die in a box.
And I think what all comics also hate is we hate, and it's probably a jealousy thing, but we hate when, like, magicians get hot chicks. Because you just want to shake the chick and be like, he's not really doing that.
Yeah, he's not a sorcerer.
He's not mystical. He's not going to improve your credit score by saying Alakazam. Shut the fuck. It's just so depressing.
When, okay, so you started in New York, yeah?
No, I started in Pittsburgh.
Oh,
where
shit.
I started.
There you go.
And
blue collar town.
I did stand up out there for like a couple years. Then I moved to New York.
And you, I think Brad said you were bartending at the Pittsburgh Improv? Or?
Yeah, I was bar backing, yes. Okay. So,
what is the difference between tending and backing?
Well, because you had to be 21 to bartend actually deal with. All I was doing was like shuttling cases of beer from the freezer into your car.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And
just
like
getting
mopping
a
up.
Joke or two as you're walking back and forth.
Yeah. And like literally, I had a big rubber glove and I fucking scrubbed out the urinal. I had to do that. Like, to this day, I don't, and this is not, like, I don't want to pat on, but, like, I never spit gum in a urinal, like, as much
good for
as
you.
It will occur to me to, like, I gotta get rid of this gum, that's a convenience, or I'll even see it, like, but I, because I used to have to pick gum out of a urinal at the Pittsburgh
you
Funny
can't
Bone.
Scrape it out.
Yeah, you gotta fucking use your little hand and pick out gum. Yeah, so,
geez.
Anyway, but yeah,
who,
so that's
who would
how
you hear when you were walking back and forth? I mean, who was...
I'm trying to think of
That struck a chord with you.
Jay Scott Holman was one of the first comics I saw live that I was really impressed by. Like, I think he's still doing the road or whatever. But I know Jon Stewart blew me away. Like,
whoa.
He was fucking great. Like,
so you saw that and were like, wow, this
guy. I saw him like back in his like leather jacket days when he was like smoking a pack of cigarettes and like drinking Heinekens on stage. Like, he would bring a six pack.
Was he trying to be Dice too?
Oh yeah, he had like that was his look. Like, it was
really?
Very like fucking Dice New York, like, you
wow.
know, every New York comic thing.
Yeah.
You know, like leather jacket and shit. And he was fucking great. Like, he did like an hour and 20, and I saw the whole thing. It was really good.
Yeah, it's crazy to me.
Todd Barry emceed that week.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
So and guys like that is what you heard. Like, their stuff and go, oh shit, like, that's, they're kind of thinking the same way I'm thinking, or like,
well, I'd already I was like a huge comedy fan.
Okay.
Like, I wanted to be a comic since I was like 12 years old. Like,
no kidding.
Yeah, so it's not like I got the job at I got the job at the Funny Bone on purpose so I could start doing stand up,
right.
You know, but
yeah.
Cuz my uncle was a comic for a few years in the 80s.
Oh,
like,
shit.
He was basically like one nighter feature act level. That's really all he got to, you know, but I was like 11 and it was the coolest thing in the world that I had an uncle that did stand up. So like,
sure. God.
So that's the thing, is like, I feel like most people, they don't. They like comp, but they have no idea how to get into
it.
You
that
know?
Made it
like,
real for you because you got exposed to it.
Exactly. Yeah. I had a family member who did it, so to me, it was like a job option. So I was like, "Oh, I'll just be a comedian." That's what he
that's
does.
Awesome.
You know? So
that's huge because one of the number one questions I get as a comic is how do you become a comedian?
Yeah,
people don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, well, where's the job application thing where you go get your jokes? Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
sign up, like, I would like to be a comedian. Here are your jokes. Like,
right.
Like,
yeah.
That place does not exist.
I hear comics say that too. Like, you know, like, I should have done it 5 years earlier, but I didn't know how to start. You know, like,
yeah.
So that's, I started at 17 because I basically, like, oh, it's like as soon as I got old enough to,
you're like, wow, if
have the balls to do it, I did it. Yeah.
Uncle can do it. I can do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Did,
so that's why
did,
I started.
What was his act? Like, what was his?
He did. I remember he had a tape that he sent me, and I, like, fucking ruined it because I watched it so many times because I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And, like, he was real different. He was a clown in Ringling also in
what?
The circus.
Oh,
so he was, like, super physical and whatever. Like,
yeah.
It's real different than what I do. But
yeah.
He's a funny dude. He's still funny. But yeah, it was like, all I remember is he did an impression of, I'm not saying this was good either, by the way, but I think he was my uncle. So,
sure.
But he did an impression of Bob Dylan ordering food
at
a McDonald's.
I'm already on board.
And I just remember something about him like leaning over the, like having to do this to get up over the counter because he's a tiny guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Okay,
so like,
okay.
He like puts his hands up and then, because he was real good at physical shit.
Yeah.
And then I think it was just like, I'd like a Whopper with a cheese, please, or whatever. It was something like that.
Oh, see,
and whatever
I thought he was going to take the stance of like, how weird must it be for Bob Dylan to talk to the drive-thru voice because it's the same voice.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, don't try to punch up my fucking... my 3-year comedy veteran uncle's shitty feature act set. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
When I was 11, it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And like, we still talk. We're really close. Me and my, like, you know, so
awesome.
He's thrilled that
he must
still
be
do
so
it.
Pumped.
Yeah, he thinks it's cool. So, yeah, in fact, he came to At Midnight not long ago when
That's
he was
awesome.
Out here. So
yeah.
He's still like in the business, sort of. He works at Sesame Place. Do you know what that is? It's
what?
Like a theme park in Philly that's like a Sesame Street theme park
oh,
or
nice.
Whatever.
Oh.
And he like writes all the shows or whatever. Right. So like
there you go.
That's amazing.
So like he's like the head of the entertainment for them. So,
dude,
like,
he's representing Sesame Street.
Yeah, so like fucking Cookie. He writes a lot
America's
of Cookie Monster shows
city.
And bullshit.
He writes
whatever.
A Cookie
so,
Monster
yeah,
show.
Yeah, so
wow.
he was
dude,
out
don't
here.
Just brush by that. Like, that's
no, no,
not
no.
A
it's
big
it's,
fucking
it's
deal.
Very cool. Like, so, but.
How many cookie puns does he know?
Like all of them. He does all the voiceovers in the park, too.
What?
So like if you're in the park and you're in line,
I
he's like
be.
The guy going like, you know, we're gonna whatever, you know.
Who
like,
the fuck was that? What
yeah,
character
so,
was that?
I don't know. I was trying I was like, should I do a I can't do a Cookie Monster. I was like bailed on it halfway through. Whatever.
Cookie.
Yeah.
I think that's Cookie
Monster. Yeah. So yeah. He does that. So he was out here to like meet with the Jim Henson people and
that's
then
incredible.
He came to the studio. So yeah, it was fun.
When you were 12, were you a slinger on the playground, like jabbed? I mean, like where did you get
oh,
the
yeah,
comedy
yeah.
quickness?
Yeah, I don't know. I was just like a funny kid, I think. And like I immediately recognized that was what made girls notice that I was
yeah.
around, you know, because like
does.
I was terrible
made
at sports.
Made dudes respect you. Oh, you yeah. were not good at sports.
No, but I played them all. But I was like fucking Rudy on every team. You know what I mean? Like I was just the fucking. In fact, I vividly remember like I would get in the last like 2 minutes of every game because
yeah.
I was like the worst. So like only if we were up by like 30, they'd put me in.
Were
or whatever.
You were you the guy where when you came in like. The other team's parents started applauding, like, oh,
yeah.
oh give
yeah,
him
yeah,
a shot.
Yeah,
give
oh, totally. Dude. I was totally the crowd favorite. The crowd loved me because, like, I was such, like, a sad little boy that they were so excited that this fucking pathetic kid finally got in, right?
Oh,
so, like, I would get a huge round of every time I'd come in because, like, and I thought I was good. Like, I knew that I wasn't good
yeah,
or whatever, but
yeah.
it was nice anyway.
It's
still
nice
and then,
that you get that. And
yeah.
And then, like, you score a basket, the whole gym
oh, dude.
Erupts.
One
just
game,
like...
I scored 8, and they fucking carried me off the court. Like, we were up by 40. Like, we didn't need my 8 points, but I scored 8, and they everyone carried me off the fucking court. It was
oh,
the coolest.
Dude, you're what, 6'4"?
Yeah, but that's the thing. Everybody thought I would be good, and I'm not at all. Like,
you,
but I am 6'4".
You were
6'4".
A late bloomer or
yeah.
what?
Yeah, I didn't. I was like 5-something. Yeah, like I didn't turn 6'4" until I was like a junior in high school. So.
Right.
But the point is that one time there was a kid who was like literally the best athlete in the history of our town, and his name is Jay right. Tant, and he ended up playing a few years for the Arizona Cardinals. Right.
Oh, shit.
So he was like. Like the great, he was the greatest at every sport, you
yeah.
know, and
he was that kid.
Qualified for the Olympics and swimming and
Damn.
Shit like that, right? So he was my best friend as a child because he would fight my fights for me when I would get myself in trouble for saying goofy shit,
what?
Right? So like the
wow.
two of us would, and I made him laugh, and then in turn he would have my back when I would fucking. Make fun of someone kid who was like capable
Holy
of beating
crap.
The shit out of me.
It's
it was
like a regular of Mice and Men story.
You know what it was like? It's like that scene in Tombstone where fucking Doc Holliday shows up and kills Johnny Ringo before Kurt Russell has a chance to because
yeah.
he knows like he would lose that gunfight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so he just shows up and the guy's already dead. That's what would happen when I would go to when I'd have to fight somebody.
Yeah.
I would show up and that kid would already be dead because Jay Tant would smash him to the ground. It was really, it was
Jay
great.
Jay Tant, you know what? I'm going to
applaud
you.
The guy's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best.
That's awesome because it then also allowed you the freedom to kind of be
Yeah, to just
mouth.
Run my mouth and
yeah.
be a ball-busting asshole.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we were in one game and Jay, it was a fast break and it was just me down the court and Jay threw the basketball to me and it went right through my hands. And
yeah.
But we were up by a lot or whatever. And Joe McCall's dad, Joe McCall was the other big, like the other athletic dude,
yeah,
right?
Okay.
But not as good as Jay Tant.
Sure.
And I think that really, really bugged Joe McCall's abusive, shitty dad, right?
Because he knew.
Yeah, because
yeah.
he knew Jay Tant was like
yeah,
a fucking
like,
angel sent from heaven to
right.
show us how to play basketball. And his like just brutish, you know, elbowy son, who was
yeah.
also good, but just because he was
not
like
the best. Yeah.
yeah, not the anyway, so fast break, Jay Tant throws you the ball, goes right through my hands. Fucking the whole crowd is on my side because I'm terrible at basketball.
So
and
just a collective.
Right. Just, yeah. And then from the crowd, you just hear Joe McCall's fucking dumb drunk dad yell, get Jesse out of there. Right. Like, and it just echoed
oh,
around this
God.
Arena. Right. Like this
Come
fucking
on.
Eighth
you're,
grade kid
you're
basketball
up by
game.
40.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And my little shoulders sank because it just like fucking echoed around. Like you just heard this fucking grown man so upset with how bad I was at basketball
yeah.
that he needed me out of the fucking last minute of the game.
The last minute.
Yeah.
Listen, I've got a scout here looking at my game.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesse can't be fucking it up.
You're distracting him from looking at anybody good.
Yeah, exactly. It was like fucking seventh grade, though. That's the. And then I remember, like, and everybody was like, duh, boo. Like, they booed Joe McCall's dad.
Love it.
And then afterwards, I remember he, like, cornered me in a hallway, and he was like, listen, you got to understand it's for the good of the team. Or, like, he didn't even apologize.
Oh, God.
He just was, like, trying to rationalize to a fucking 12-year-old why he yelled at him.
Right, in front of everyone and shamed him in front of adults and kids alike.
Yeah.
What an asshole.
Anyway, but it was funny, so it all worked out.
It's so funny how you remember, like, the names of all those people. I mean, that's really, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, God, I remember there was this kid I had to stay in. I pulled my bottom lip down and put my tongue out to make, like, giant lips when I was in the fourth grade to one of my buddies just to make him laugh while the teacher was talking. Got sent in the hallway for, like, all recesses for, like, the next week. And then when I finally got let out and I got to rejoin recess, it was like fucking I was reunited with my family, like, after the Holocaust. I was like, I ran back out with so much enthusiasm and, like, my friends, and like, I get to see everybody. I recognize that kickball, and I'm just running out there. And this kid, Joel Helgevold, was doing a jump rope circle where he would basically, like, run in a circle and keep it low.
Right.
And people would jump over it.
Yeah.
But he let it get a little bit high, and it got really high, like, above his head. Yeah. And I ran out the door being like, recess, I'm back. And just as soon as I got out, dude, that rope fucking whipped me right in the face. And, dude, I went down and went right back into the nurse's office. And I'll never forget that, because it was, like, the first time I remember experiencing, like, real pain.
Right.
Like, at school, when I didn't have, like, parents or any...
Right.
It was just like, you know, you're on your own. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to cry on the ground, or you're going to go inside?
Yeah.
They're both.
Oh, my God.
But Joel Helgevold, I mean, like, where is he now?
I don't know.
They should do a VH1, Facebook, where are they now?
About
recess
individual
bullies.
Shitheads.
School bullies.
Individual shitheads. that will be a fun, like, action figure toy for adults.
Right.
Called Lil Shitheads.
Right, yeah.
And it's just like the kids
Joe McCall is a gay assistant manager at a Radio Shack somewhere whose dad hasn't talked to him in 20 years. That's my guess.
Hey, people need batteries.
Yeah. So.
All right, so then you finally what? When do you get the balls to go, like, all right, now I'm done working? Yeah, I'm done working at the Funny Bone. I need to get into this.
Well, no, I mean, I that was my strategy for getting into show business.
Yeah.
Was like, so I would be there, and I would be there for every show, and then sometimes the host wouldn't show up, or he'd be stuck in and I'd have to go, I'd get to go up.
Oh, nice.
Or, like, occasionally after I started getting a little good, and the headliner would come in on a Tuesday when we did the open mic, and he would see me, he would let me do a guest spot on the show later in the week, you know,
there
like
you
that
go.
Kind of shit. So I just started to kind of get in that way or whatever, but... But the other thing, too, is I was at my college at Duquesne University of Pittsburgh,
oh, nice.
Where I went to school, and I kind of put myself out there as the resident comic on campus because there was no other one.
Awesome.
And so I got to, like, open for everybody who came through, you know?
Oh, that's great.
So it was, like, Rob Schneider and Jimmy Fallon and, like, people like that, like,
dude,
when they
amazing.
Were, like new, just doing college gigs, you know?
Yeah,
actually,
but...
no, Schneider was already at SNL, but this was before Fallon did Saturday
Night Live. Right, but, like, still, like you said, you put yourself out there. There was a girl that did that. Adam and I both went to USC, and there was this one girl named Bryce that put herself out there as, like, I'm the comedian at USC, and then, like, she got to open for, like, Margaret Cho and,
stuff
like that. She bombed every time, but the fact that she put herself out there is like, I'm the person. Like,
you know
she
what?
Got,
yeah,
she got
I'm
that
always
stage
disappointed
time.
When I go to perform at colleges, which I don't do a lot anymore. But when I did, and there wasn't a me, you know, like, why wouldn't you fucking use this opportunity? Because it was great. Because I would then go out afterwards to a bar with them and pick their brain and whatever, like that kind
God,
of thing.
Because they wanted to, like, they
well,
didn't
just
know
whatever.
That.
They're stuck in this fucking shitty college town, and like, you know how you do colleges, and they're like, one of the worst things about them is how, like, fucking isolating they are. Like,
dude, I did the University of Pueblo, Colorado. I took a small plane to get there. Literally, there was a Carl's Jr. and two bars and the hotel I was staying at, aside from this college.
And it's like...
Yeah. University of Manchester, New Hampshire. That was mine.
Yeah, and it's, like, not fun and be potentially creepy and illegal to hang out with the college students.
Yeah.
So, like, you have no one to talk to. So if there was another comic on that show, no matter how fucking green or shitty they are, at least it's,
that
like,
was your person.
Somebody in
that
the trench with
even
you.
Even if it was
so Kreskin. Yeah, so you could like talk to them. You know what I mean?
That
yeah,
was,
exactly.
That was
right?
your safe zone.
Yeah. So anyway, so I think that's kind of why they would fucking go out to a bar and talk to me or whatever.
How was that jamming with Fallon at a bar? Are you picking his brain and stuff about
yeah,
it?
Totally. In fact, I remember vividly that he told me that like you know what it was? He had just signed he just made the audition for SNL. So he was about to be on SNL.
Wow.
So he was talking about that and like he was like, ah man, like, you know, like he wasn't being cocky at all, but he was like, ah, like my life's getting crazy or whatever.
Yeah.
He said that people are sending him scripts all the time or whatever. And then he was like, I just don't want to do anything like dumb, like a dumb comedy. I want to do something like cool and
real. Cue the movie Taxi
Wait.
With Queen Latifah.
That's where I'm going with it. But the point, no, it's fine. Then the first thing he did was Band of Brothers. Did you know that? He was like a small
That's
part
right.
in Band of Brothers. And I
Holy
saw that
shit,
and I was like,
I totally
oh my God, this
that.
Motherfucker told me he was going to do cool shit. And he is. Like,
wow.
God, good for him. Second thing he did is fucking the flying taxi movie with
Latifah.
Fucking Queen Latifah. And I was like, oh, you fucking sell
you
out.
Fucked
like
it up.
Immediately. Like,
yeah.
Anyways, well, but.
He started off with such great promise.
Yeah. The first
Whatever
decision
happened to
was
that
fucking
poor
great.
Bastard.
Yeah. But anyway, but this is a fun story. So I worked with one of the other ones that came was Mark Curry. Did I tell you guys this at the
no,
festival
Art
the other
Curry?
Day?
Hang with
no.
Mr. Cooper?
Yeah. So Mr. Cooper came to my school, and I was like super excited about that because, like, you know, he was like one
Dude,
of the
TGIF.
First famous guys that I ever got a chance to work with or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, I was super green. But, you know, so I do the show. Like, I'm so green that I still have my, like, notes in the cigarette pack. And, like, I'd leave my – because that was – you could still smoke everywhere on stage or whatever.
So then you
like,
put them on the stool. So
yeah, so I put them
hidden.
On the stool, and I would, like, reference the – so I come out to – so afterwards, I talk to Mark Curry, and I tell him that I wanted to be – move to New York and be a comedian. He couldn't have been cooler to me. He talked to me for, like, an hour and, like,
so great.
Just told me – like, gave me all this great advice on, you know, like, well, here's what you do. You know, like, I told him I want to move, and he was like, wait till you feel like you're the best dude here in Pittsburgh and then go because then
– Yeah.
You know, you're only competing against the best guy from Charlotte and Baltimore and whatever.
Right.
Point is, and then he just gave me this great advice, and so cool to me. And like, I went home and I wrote it all down, and I was like, so I put it on my mirror, and I was like, I decided like that's what I'm gonna do. Like I'm gonna like,
wow.
I never even sought a second opinion. I just basically was like, that's what I'm gonna. And I like literally structured my 20s around Mark Curry's advice. Like I definitely like did exactly what he told me to do. And for whatever it's worth, it worked. Like I paid my fucking mortgage with jokes. So like, you know, like,
no shit.
So it worked, right? So
thank you, Mark Curry.
Yeah. So I've always wanted to thank Mark Curry. This is going somewhere, by the way. So
okay.
I was like, I just never. We don't travel in the same circles.
Sure.
I never have an opportunity to run into Mark Curry. So finally, I'm at the Vegas Comedy Festival, that TBS thing. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's 2008. And I was there with Geraldo, and I was doing shows, and we're in the green room, and fucking Mark Curry is there. And I was like, oh, my God, this fucking guy, I got to go talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I go running over to Mark Curry, and I was like, dude, listen, you are never going to remember this in a million years. But literally, like, 10 years ago, I opened for you at my college, and I just wanted to say that you were super cool. And he stops me. He goes, Pittsburgh, right? And I was like,
oh, shit.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, bet you want to know why I remember that, right? And I go, yeah, I'd love to know why you remember that. And he goes, because there was some girl in town I was trying to hook up with, and you wouldn't shut the fuck up asking me dumb comedy questions. You kept at me for like an hour. You fucking followed me out to my car. I couldn't fucking shake you to save my life. You were just chasing me around campus, just asking me fucking stupid questions about comedy. And I was like,
oh my God.
I was like, you know, I structured my life around that advice. And it was like, we just
I
had
a
really
give a
fun
shit,
moment.
Man, you cock blocked me.
Yeah, that it was like one man's cock block is another's life plan. You know
no
what I mean?
Kidding.
That I swear to God, I'm sure he's right. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's how that went down. But in my head, still, even when I was telling you guys the story,
right.
I picture us like sitting on the edge of the stage and him like outlining how comedy works to me. Like, you
just
know, like,
because he's the best
like a,
guy
like
in the
a
world.
Fatherly fishing trip we were on or some bullshit.
Oh
but I'm positive
God.
That's not how it went. But that's how I still remember
right.
it. Like, well, you just took me under his wing, and we had this
Dude.
Beautiful moment together.
Dude, what?
It's, meanwhile, I'm just chasing him around the whole time, just like, so, wait, how do you get booked to whatever? Yuck.
It's so crazy. Like, there's that phrase, like, there's two sides to every story, but what? Like,
what
a more concrete example than that of just a life-changing moment as opposed to this guy stopping me for getting my dick wet.
And two very different ends of the spectrum, too. I mean, it's like you're so eager and up-and-coming, and he's doing his thing. So he's not like every – you're meeting with different amounts of energy and passion about similar things.
I mean, you've had that happen before now. Like, I'm super conscious of that now. Like, every time I meet some, like, fucking overzealous open-micer kid – I always realize, like, oh, that's me when I was what I did.
Dude,
you know? So,
when I first met you, when I was hosting for you and Greg, excuse me, at Irvine Improv.
Right.
Had you not been there and been so awesome to me, I probably would have done that to Greg.
Oh.
As far as just like, because, you know, he's my favorite, so I would have been like, but, you know, and there you were like the buffer of like, hey,
oh, right.
To kind of like, you know, I mean, you were so genuinely gracious and you know, conversational and with advice and everything, but it was like, you know, if whoever was featuring if hadn't been that, right, dude, right. I would have beelined every day.
Just
Greg,
buzzed
so,
around,
what do you think about
time?
This closer?
Right, right.
I mean, yeah, dude.
Well, that's fun.
It's funny because you kind of do that when you're the feature act, if you're like the regular guy.
Right.
You kind of act as that sort of protector. Like, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, maybe you sensed I was going to do that, and that's
everything goes through me.
I don't know. I think we both thought you were pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because, yeah, there had been a series of shitty MCs, and so
oh, really?
I think you were like a breath of fresh air.
Oh, good.
You isn't, know? That, but, isn't that such a relief?
Yeah. And I feel like also because kind of in part oh, we our proximity to L.A., like, oh, it's going to be somebody who's qualified.
Oh,
you know?
Cool, yeah.
But a lot of times, you show up in fucking Nebraska, and it's just some
oh, yeah.
local idiot.
I remember I got off stage, and I think it was the first night, and you know, and Greg just goes, I was wearing a backwards hat and this like man button up checkered shirt with short sleeves, and he goes,
many Seattle logos on it, just let you know, so many Seattle logos. Hey Greg, I'm from yeah. Seattle.
I got this great manners hat from Vinny's on 43rd and Broadway. No, but so, and he goes keep it going for Adam, everybody. He goes somebody told him to dress up like a fucking 9-year-old for the show, so I appreciate that. He goes, be sure to tip him and buy some candy for his uniforms. Dude, I was like, the grin on my face in the back was...
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, he was really good at ball busting. Yeah. It was really fun.
God, and like, you're good at ball busting. I would just imagine that those trips would just be... Like,
yeah.
If people didn't know you guys were actually friends,
they
probably would have thought, like, God, those guys are about to fight.
That guy's about to get stabbed by that Spanish fella.
Yeah, would you guys
that
ever
likey bastard?
Can that happen with people that are really quick, fiery like that, where you can get jabbed so much that like somebody can just cross a line, or would you guys ever? Because it seemed like you guys,
no.
Your rapport. I would observe you guys' rapport, and I was like, Jesus Christ, these guys are like fucking just. I mean, slingers back and forth. And I was like, I wonder if somebody ever crosses the line and digs too deep, or. Mm-hmm.
The only time that shit ever happened was regarding our mutual mission to stay sober. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, because that was kind of part of our hang, you know, was we were doing
well,
that together.
Didn't like a manager or something put you with it?
Yeah. We got sober within the week of each other, and we had the same manager, and so it was his idea to go, like, why don't you guys fucking do the road together?
You guys
get each other out of trouble.
Help each other out. Yeah.
That was like the coolest, like, because, you know, he was fucking Geraldo. He was like my favorite,
right.
too. So it was like, yes, that would
more
be
like,
amazing.
Yeah. More like him just looking at you, like, please keep my guy.
Right. Yeah. Well, so for me, it was like we came at it from different, like, you know, I was going nowhere in my career, and he was Geraldo, and the opportunity to simultaneously get sober and get my shit together, and now, like, this is tangible proof that my sobriety is paying off. Now I'm on the road with Greg. Like, so, you know, for me, it was like a much easier, but for him, you know, it was just like, well, great, I gotta fucking tow this newly sober fucking goofball around the road.
Mark,
you know,
Curry,
like,
told me about
him. Exactly. Right. He's gonna cock block me at every turn.
But you guys bonded immediately.
Because we'd gotten drunk together. We'd been like the last men standing at bars before. Like,
right.
But we were, you know, our priority was really to get drunk. So, like, we talked a couple times. But, yeah, then we just kind of hit it off when we started doing the road together, and then it just became easy. And then we started, like, writing together, like, the roasts and shit.
And that's how you got involved with them, yeah?
Yeah, that gave me my whole writing career was working
fucking
for him. Because, like, the street cred of, like, writing for him really means
always,
a lot in the comedy world.
He always had set of the night.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, he was absolutely
and that's why,
great. So.
That's why they put him up first. Because they knew, like, all right, this is the standard that we're going to set.
Right.
And people are going to be like, holy shit. If the guy, no offense to casual comedy fans, but if the guy who I don't know who he is just crushed that hard, what the fuck is the rest of this roast going to be
like?
Yeah, exactly.
So you guys are – at what point does he go, you know what, you're fucking quick as fuck and you should – write with me for the roast or write on the roast? What is he?
Yeah, well, basically, it was just we were on the road and he had to do the Flavor roast, and he was like, dude, I gotta fucking write all these jokes. You know, if you have any,
please,
you know, if you think of anything,
please tell me you wrote the iced tea. The first
I did.
Thing you
the fucking fossil joke?
Yeah.
The first thing you bought with your
Holy
record money was
shit.
Your freedom. That was, and that specifically.
Yes! That's one of my favorite roast jokes of all time.
Yeah,
thank you. That specifically, that joke, and I wrote a lot of those jokes. And,
You're so old, the first thing you bought with
your record deal money was your freedom. Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Fucking A.
Comedy Central did a top 10 best roast jokes of all time, and that was number 7. And
yeah,
I also wrote number 2.
What?
2 and 7.
Which was number 2?
Number 2 was, at the time, it was topical, and it was Lisa Lampanelli. Is a lot like that Octomom. She hasn't had 8 babies, but she has had 80 fingers inside her at the same time.
So, dude, he crushed. I remember which roast that was because he laid into her. Which one was that?
That was the cable guy roast.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Uh-huh. Where he just fucking lost it. Where he's like, how are you so famous?
Yeah. Yeah, that was not written. That was like spontaneous. And that was,
or why are you so popular?
Yeah.
That was his frustration. Like,
but
God, that's just the fact that you wrote that. That joke.
Oh, thanks,
so,
man.
That's so cool.
So then you write a bunch in your hotel room.
So I wrote, like, I took it real seriously because I love the roast.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, fuck.
Opportunity.
Geraldo just gave me this chance to, like, write some jokes for the roast. How fucking cool would that be to get a joke on the roast? Mm-hmm. So I wrote him, like, a ton of shit. And, like, so the next time I showed up with, like, a fucking professional binder full of, like, you know, racist jokes. I was like, did any of these work for you?
Man, yeah. Anyone were to read this and not know what I was doing.
Well, that's the thing. I was like the more mercenary. I was, because I'm not the one who had to say it. So,
yeah,
right.
So, like, I was like this fucking soulless monster. Like, he was like, what the fuck, dude? Like, some of the jokes I wrote, he was like, you can't, what do you, no one can say that into a microphone. What the fuck are you thinking?
Would you kind of coach me? Like, no, if you say it like this, I think it could work.
Well, I did. I argued a couple. Yeah, I did. Yeah. Well, but that was like later down the road, sure. Like after we'd written together for years, there were a couple of times where I successfully argued, like, do this fucking joke, even though you didn't want to do it. But that was after we'd established.
Yeah, that, some rapport, like, and all that.
Yeah. But and I feel like, I can't remember, one of them ate shit and then the other one did really well. Oh, the one I know, the one that did. It's convenient that I don't remember the one that ate shit, and I remember the one that did.
I don't remember the one that ate shit. Let's move on.
Yeah. Ah, what the fuck was the one that ate shit?
Don't focus on that.
Anyway, the one that did well. It was a thing at the time that it happened right there. It was Hasselhoff. He was he was sitting on a lifeguard chair.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, and Pam Anderson was there. So it was like, oh, we're sitting on a lifeguard chair because that's what you're most known for. I guess when we roasted Pam, she should have been sitting on a dick, right?
That was
like, yeah. Well, I wrote that there on the at the roast.
Oh, because I was like, you'd be there backstage.
Yeah, because, like, I was there backstage, and I was like, do that fucking joke. And he was like, I already have the set. And I was like, do the fucking.
Oh, that shit crushed.
Yeah, and so he opened with it, and it went well. So anyway,
well, he opened with a joke that you had just written.
Yeah.
There in the moment, which for those of you who don't do stand up. That's like rule number one, don't do that.
Well,
like, don't open with the joke you just wrote and are so excited to do.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's the common mistake we all make.
This is something I always admired about Greg a lot, is that Greg never did those. Like, the first time, the roast was the first time he basically said them in front of anybody. Like,
awesome.
Like,
you wouldn't work.
Like, a lot of guys nowadays, they work out their roast set at clubs and shit. He hated that. He thought that was the lamest, you know? And I feel like he would have... He was really, like, real purist about shit, and I feel like he would have benefited a little bit more from having a little more, hey, look at me, you know?
Mm-hmm,
but he, like, so resented guys who did the, like, hey, I'm over here, look at me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he never did that, but I feel like, you know, if he'd gone up and done the set at clubs, like, the running joke, maybe, like, he would have gotten more well-known for those, and the running joke wouldn't always be like, oh, and this... Puerto Rican bastard, nobody knows.
But also, maybe he would have heard jokes. He would have, like, not enjoyed certain jokes because he would have done it too much. Or
so, so, like, this was literally the first time he ever did any of them, was the night of the thing.
No, that's amazing.
I mean, that, and, like, Greg would always be fearless like that. I mean, I know him as the guy that in his special calls out the guy for being asleep.
Yeah. I was there. I opened for him for that special. Oh, it was the greatest. I remember, like, it's funny because I've seen the special, but I was, like, on the balcony. I was looking down at that guy, and I was like, what a fucking doofus that guy is.
Oh, before he started talking.
Yeah. So, because he was sleeping during my thing, too. But I was like, it's not my special. I'm not going to say anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is good on you, by the way, because that's like, A, you're like, he might want that, right? Like,
well, to be honest with you, this is another problem. But, like, at the time, they were going to give me that 10 minutes. Like, that would have been the most amazing 10-minute clip.
Oh, no shit.
You know, like, from a 3-camera shoot or whatever.
Right.
But
then fucking Greg died, and he owed them a shit ton of money. And then that got tied up and whatever. So I never fucking got that clip.
Oh,
so somewhere there's, like, a fucking great 3-camera shoot of me doing 10 minutes that I'll never see.
Yeah, because you want to call and be like, hey, I know your guy just died and my friend died, but can I get the clip?
Yeah, exactly. So,
shit.
Anyway.
What is your rule of thumb usually in shows when shit like that happens? Like, do you like to call attention to...
like stuff like that, or like dealing with hecklers, or with just, I mean, how often will you stop your momentum to like call attention to something in the show?
Oh, I usually, well, I like, my favorite thing to do is to do that in advance. Like, I sit in the back of the room, like that Hasselhoff dick chair joke. Like, that's what I do, is I sit in the back of the room and I just look at all the goofy shit that's going on in this room and like who's a goofball and whatever. Yeah. And then I go up and I do that all right off the bat. Like, right away, I just start dicking on the venue and all that bullshit and how silly this room is and why is that guy dressed like that.
Yeah.
And then that, I feel like that really like centers everybody. Like,
connects the room.
And also because, like, oh, yeah, he's right. I didn't notice that that light bulb's been burnt out the whole fucking night, you know? And then I point that out, and it's like, oh, shit, I've been in this room. So it kind of, like, it's a reason to listen to me.
Yeah.
Because, like, I just showed them a magic trick in a way. Like I just pointed out a thing you didn't notice, and it's really, it's funny.
Right.
It's been in front of your face the whole time.
Yeah.
So then they trust me enough to, like, if they don't know me, to, like, you know, fucking go with
me. Yeah. And I've noticed that with a lot of times when you do that for an audience, now they're sort of like, oh, we need to pay attention, because if we don't, he's going to shit on me the same way he just shit on everything in the room.
Where
came out guns blazing. Like, like, this is what I'm capable of.
Yeah, but usually I don't fuck with people during the show unless they do it with me. You know, like, I try not to. But just because, like, I wrote fucking jokes. Like, people would rather, like, that's what I'm good at, so why wouldn't I?
Yeah, and you're really good at writing jokes.
When you write, you're incredible. When you write, go ahead.
No, but there was one time I was in Edmonton, Canada, and I was doing a show, and there was this woman who was just fucking awful, and she had, like, a teenage son and her husband. And she just kept – it was like she was just automatically – she just like hated me because I was an American, right? Which a lot of Canadians – I'm married to a Canadian, so fucking trust me. I know there's like this unbelievable superiority and inferiority complex at the exact same time going at full throttle.
Yeah, it's like we're better than you, but no one knows that.
Yes, that's exactly what I always say, is like, we are so much better than you, and why don't you give a shit? You know what I'm saying? Which, like, by definition is the – it's a superiority, inferiority. Because if you were better than us, you wouldn't give a shit that we don't care that you're right.
Right.
So the point is that so every time I start a joke, she starts like, she snipes at me. She just says something cunty about me being an American, right? Or whatever. And I just let it go for the whole show. Because the other thing that Canadians are is they're like super polite and they're mortified if it's perceived that anyone knows that they don't like Americans.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, they like to keep that their little fucking quiet secret.
but
they would never publicly admit, like, oh yeah, Americans suck. You know, like, but between them, they're always like, oh, fuck America. You know what I mean? Whatever. So this fucking lady is like, first of all, like outing their fucking fun party trick. And then secondly, like being shitty out loud to me, and it's rude and what. So I let it go for like 40 minutes, like almost the whole show. And I never do this on stage usually, but I actually at some point I gave her enough rope that I asked her a couple questions and then she said something and then I said something and then I found out she's not even from this town. Like, she's from Toronto and she's visiting or whatever. And I was like, so you are a guest in this town just like I am, and you've been a fucking dumb cunt this whole show. And the whole fucking crowd exploded, right? And she fucking picks up her shit and storms out. Like, I've never actually, like, angrily called a woman a cunt on stage, right?
Yeah.
Except for this lady. And she fucking takes off, and her fucking husband and son stay there.
Yeah.
And watch me as a show. And then afterwards, they fucking came up to me and shook my hand and bought my CD. Yeah, I called this fucking kid's and this lady, this dude's wife, a cunt to their face, and they thanked me for it. So anyway,
wow,
yeah, it was pretty.
That's got God,
those.
And also, there's one more, and I want to direct all of our listeners to look up this video. There's a video of you, and I think it's at Crackers in Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
because that stupid, terrible brick wall that everybody makes fun of.
Yes, and I'll kind of summarize, but you got to watch the video. You're doing a joke about how some, like Donald Sutherland and Jack Nicholson, they just got so old in this business that now they just play people that are about to die.
Yeah, like, I just think that's like a funny premise, and I'll let you get back to it, but just the gist of the premise
it's your story,
that, like, old people, like, there's a weird age you get to as an actor where the only roles you get are guy who looks old enough to die of old age, you know what I mean? That has to be scary to you, as a human being, to, like, really wrap your mind around your own mortality.
Yeah.
To go, the only reason I got this part is because if I sat down at a chair and didn't wake up, everybody would be like, yeah, fucking of course, because you look so terrible. You know what I mean? So, like, that's got to fuck with you, you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's the gist of the joke. So go back to
then, you're talking about people that look old enough to just die without any reason.
Right.
Just old age death. And this woman just yells out, it's her 50th birthday. Yeah. You're like, why did you choose this moment?
Yes. Yeah, this fucking dumb woman just pipes up and goes, it's her birthday. Like, she wanted me to acknowledge her birthday. And I just pointed out, like, isn't that an odd time to point that out during my dying of old age chunk to remind everybody that she's a half a century old? Like, what a weird time to bring that up.
Oh, such a great fucking video. Yeah. But,
oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I think all comics kind of get excited for great heckler comic
videos.
Yeah.
And there, I feel like it's too inundated. You know, there's too many terrible ones, you know? Yeah. So, like, you know, it's like, you know, heckler owns whatever. But, I've seen your one. Yours is great. The one that, with the black guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was a really good one. Okay. So, yeah. But they are few and far between, you know, because the rest of the time it's just some fucking, like, open micer in Tulsa.
Yeah, and the guy, like, dropped the bottle, and the guy goes, well, this guy's fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy goes, huh? He goes, huh? That's what you sound like.
Yeah, and then he just races home to put it on YouTube. Like, just, heckler gets owned.
Yeah. It's like, what? It's like, okay, when it's from, it's like, we can tell it's from your YouTube account.
Yeah.
When it says, Jerry Comic 24.
Yeah.
Also, funny Jerry, and it's like, comic totally destroys heckler.
Yeah, that's what I said. Come on, like, guy. The way because I put it up myself, because I thought it was a fun, because the point is that bit never really works well. Like, I think that's a funny point about old actors.
Yeah.
I've never gotten that joke to work right. And then it was great that that lady stepped in shit right in the middle of my joke. And I was able to kind of like, oh, great. Now I can put it out there.
Yes.
Because I think the premise is funny. Yes. And then it has a great payoff because this dumb broad starts shouting during my joke. So it's like, now I don't have to do that joke anymore because I kind of cheated and figured out a way to make it work, right?
Is there do you have how many times, like you said you love that joke, like when you write something like that you really love, do you give yourself a time frame to go like, all right, I'm going to work this at this many cities or if
I've said this to so many like younger comics and whatever, like my advice always is like, if you, like you two are professional fucking comedians, it is a fact that you're funny. You have been paid to be amusing. It's a proven fact. You're funny guys.
All right.
So if you're a funny person,
agree, disagree, but okay.
Then everything, things that you think are funny are funny. You're right. Like, so it's just, you're not ready to do it yet. You know what I mean? Like, you're just, your comedic voice hasn't caught up to your time. Like, there's so many jokes in 19 years that I wrote 2 years into comedy that I tried and they fucking ate shit. And then I put them away for a year and then I tried it again and it ate shit. And then I put it away and I tried it 2 years later and it ate shit. And then I put it away and I tried it 3 years after that and it fucking ate shit. And then I tried it 3 years ago and it is a fucking closer. You know what I mean? And it's literally just because I'm right. That's funny. Yeah. I'm just not ready to do that joke yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I never throw anything away because I always know someday I'll figure it out. You know?
I'll just figure it later.
I mean, that's
brilliant.
What? Yeah.
And that's true. I think of how I closed my last special. How I closed my last special was jokes about my dad and when he fought cancer.
Right.
And it's like, for a year and a half after the event happened, I tried, failed. And it took like it took a good year and a half, almost 2 years for me to finally figure out how to make that funny and not get the entire audience to get depressed.
Oh, sure. Yeah, totally. You were too close to it. I've always felt that. Like, Chris Rock said something amazing in that it was like such an eye-opening thing in that one thing he did with Seinfeld and Talking Funny with
Louis and Ricky Gervais.
Right. And so the four of them are talking comedy, and Chris Rock said this thing. Oh, he was retaliating because Louis was making fun of the fact that Chris Rock restates the premise over and over and over again.
Yeah, which you know,
he's just
do.
Like, yeah, he's just
women
like,
be shopping.
Yeah, he'll say that same shit over and over and over again, like just beat the fucking premise into people. Mm-hmm. And he says he does that because a lot of times he sees comics that have this great joke. It's just they're not setting up the premise right, so the audience doesn't see it the way they see it. They're not. They didn't get all the way. Like, you've been thinking about it, they haven't. So you really need to give them all the information they're going to need to see it the way you see it so that's why he keeps reminding everybody of like what we're talking about here so that when he does the punchline, everyone is exactly in
maximum
his headspace.
Potential
right?
to deliver it, yeah.
So I think that's half the problem with a lot of these fucking jokes that I have tried to make work that don't work is that I'm just not getting people to see exactly why I think it's funny that Jack Nicholson now only gets roles because his heart looks like it's going to explode.
About, you know what I mean? Schmidt.
Yeah, yeah.
Bucket list.
Right, yeah. He's just old man who dies for no reason, you know? Hey, fucking not... Donald Sutherland, every role he does now is just like an old man who dies of old age, you know?
Morgan Freeman, Las Vegas.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, exactly, right. That's got to fuck with you because, like, you know, fucking... You know, they were like
they're not going to Zac Efron and being like, you know what, you look like you could die.
Yeah,
like no, if Zac Efron died without causing a movie, there'd have to be 20 minutes in terms of an investigation about why he died.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah, like Jack Nicholson's like, I used to get fucking scripts to be a pirate. Now, like every role I get is me just being Papap who doesn't wake up from a nap. Like that's.
Papap's nap.
Yeah, it's gotta be so upsetting.
I mean,
you know?
I can't wait to see Jack Nicholson and Papap's nap. It's gonna be a great movie
this summer.
Yeah, Adam Sandler's already written that four times.
Hey God, why am I here? Well, you went to sleep.
That's a really good impression.
Yeah, that's Jack. Everyone could do a Jack.
Still, it's a good one.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Well, all right, four impressions. I'm up to four.
Fuck yeah.
Sweet.
Can I tell you a story about? I was telling you about what a great, and I don't want to box you, but no. What a pleasant MC you were to work with.
Oh, really?
Back in the day. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Please tell me.
I was going to tell you the worst MC I ever worked with story because it's funny, I think.
I want to know real quick, too.
A guy named Brad Williams.
No.
Oh, shit.
No.
He was so damn small. Wait, I want to hear, though, when you guys, because I regretted, like, after I'd gotten enough rapport with you guys, and then remember on Halloween, there was, I think, three shows still or something. I remember there was a reason that
was over Halloween weekend.
Oh, no, yeah, and they cut one of the shows. That's what it is. It was a 7 and a 9. And
right,
they cut the 9. And I remember Greg going off about cutting the 9 show because he was like, "You fucking adults need to go out and dress up." And
oh,
like,
right.
What the fuck? And it was amazing, just berating the people that were there at 7, being like, "Yeah, apparently we're not doing a 9 o'clock because you fucking." I gotta put on my Pirates of the Caribbean costume and be Betty Boop or whatever. But so then you guys,
so
I was trying to get you guys to come up to West Hollywood with me, but you guys were gonna go around the spectrum. I think go to Dave and Buster's or something.
Yeah,
and I left and I was like, it's a great like the Santa Monica parade and the party. And in my head, I left and I was like, they're not coming up. Why would you drive all the way up to Hollywood?
Yeah, I think it was the distance. Well, also that it was just like, that seems like a minefield of temptation that would have been a disaster.
1,000%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But so I'm curious.
Especially
like,
on the sluttiest night of the year. You know what I mean? Like, you know what? Like, Greg was like trying to fucking be a
when you have girls
sober,
that had,
guy.
Yeah, when you have girls that like have two bow ties on their nipples.
Right.
And they're like, what's your costume? Conjoined twins in a tuxedo.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know where the fuck that came from.
So you, great costume. But,
sure.
But you were saying,
whatever,
like,
it worked.
You guys, like what did you have, like, after all the MCs you've had, like, was there a moment when you guys were like, oh, all right, well, this guy's not totally terrible, like when you're watching
about
the
you
no,
I think we just immediately liked you, you know, like you weren't like needy and you seemed like a good dude and you fucking pulled your weight, like people thought you were funny
enough
and you weren't doing bullshit, you know, like, so it was like, all
right,
this guy's cool,
all right, cool.
Who was the worst MC though?
Well, I wasn't with Geraldo, but I think it's just a fun story to tell other comics. But so I was in this club in Rochester, Minnesota called Goonies. Have you guys ever heard of it?
Oh man, I want to. And I want to play it.
It's really great. Like it's a dumb B room.
Are you required
really
to
great.
Do the truffle shuffle at the end of every set?
Oh, is that a reference to the movie? I haven't seen the movie since I was a child. I don't remember.
Chunk,
sorry,
the fat kid. He does.
Oh,
the
right. Oh, okay. Isn't he like a famous guy? Or isn't
he's
like
a lawyer now.
Oh, that's what he does. Yeah, he's a lawyer now. Right. Yeah. Anyway, the point is that so Goonies is literally across the street from the Mayo Clinic, right? Which is where just fucking everybody from all over the world fucking comes for a Hail Mary before they die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
because it's like one of the best hospitals in the world, right?
Whoa.
So the point is that most of the people who come to that show are people from somewhere else who are just watching some fucking dad or grandparent waste away.
And they need a
and
laugh.
And then they come over to the club. So the shows are fucking great. Like, you can't fuck them up. You know what I mean?
Cause, because when people are that desperate
to they
laugh,
just, like,
they
it's
want
like,
to
kind
so
of feels,
bad.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not to be corny about it, but it feels like kind of more important than ordinary stand-up because it's like, oh, like, I feel like I'm affecting change in someone's life positively. right? Like, it's that corny bullshit where it's like, oh, laughter, man, whatever.
It is the best medicine.
Yeah.
So. I'll say it.
It's like, no, I think the Mayo Clinic is right there.
Yeah, the Mayo Clinic has better medicine.
Nope.
Yeah, penicillin is a pretty good medicine for one.
Nope, these punchlines.
As some sort of anti-venom is a pretty good medicine, right? I'm not going to fucking joke my way out of a fucking rattlesnake bite, so I would go with anti-venom. Well, but the point is... So they're like a super great. Sometimes they like hug you after the show. Like it's a real great, right? Yeah. And I used to do it for like annually for a couple years when I was like just doing shit in the Midwest all the time. And so I went up there and this one time the MC, the feature act was great. And I don't remember his name, but he was like a good dude. And then the MC was, it was literally his first, second week, right, ever as a comic.
But when you're up in those small towns, when you're 2 weeks in, you're the veteran.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but here's the thing. He was a blind guy, but he was also an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, so, look, here's the thing. Not every handicapped person is an inspiration. You know what I mean?
Why are you locking eyes with me at this point?
Because you have the pass in your car, and you get free shit.
But some of them are just dumb people on top of being a handicapped person. Yes, and that's this fucking guy. I swear to God, we would sit there. He fucked up everything you could possibly fuck up, and then things didn't even occur to us you could fuck up. You know what I mean? Like just for example, he would sit in the back at a table with us, the other two comics, and then he would be absolutely astounded every time the show was starting. Like, it was news to him. Like, so that goofy fucking comedy club music, like the Curly Shuffle or whatever bullshit would start playing, and he was not prepared, which I think need to set yourself.
To be fair, you can't look down at his watch and go, all right, 10 minutes.
Yeah, but I mean, still, like, if you have some kind of disability, I think you make a preparation, especially if you're going to be on stage for the second time of your life, like, or fifth time,
you
whatever.
You set an alarm, like.
Yeah, whatever the fuck you do, like, you just go, be aware of the.
Yes.
Right.
But so anyway, so every single time the fucking dumb music would kick up and you're like the Jock Jam CD, he would go, like,
y'all ready for this?
Yeah, yeah. And he would go, oh shit, right? And he'd grab his cane and jump up and smash into this wall. There was a wall right here, and he would just like that, right? Just bam into the, and he would like, oh fuck, that wall, right? Four shows in a row, same wall, exact same thing. And it got to the point where it's like, I'm not going to tell him because, like, I don't know what it's like to be blind, but you should fucking know that wall's there right now. Like, why is a muscle memory kicked in to go, like, wait a minute, when I go right, there's a wall there. Like, he never learned that. He would just, bam, every show, smashing that fucking wall.
I would pay my last week's paycheck to get that security cam footage.
Yeah, every goddamn show.
Splice it together.
So then, which is even sillier.
You think he was doing it as a bit to entertain you guys?
No, he wasn't entertaining at any level.
Okay, because, you know. So that would be too advanced for him.
So just to watch a blind guy and then his cane falls, he's like, this fucking Jock Jam is playing while he's
scrambling
to get it and then run up on the stage. And then he fucked up literally everything he could fuck up. Like, just MC, like, 101 shit. Like, he would say your name first and then ramble for 4 minutes. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know. Brad Williams is a comedian, and he's going to be great. And I think you guys are going to like him. And, you know, he's been on TV. And, I think you're going to enjoy what he does. And so we're looking forward to it. And then, so you never know, like, when to get on stage. You're like, just fucking stop talking so I can. So you're just standing there on the edge of the stage like a doofus, you know? Because, like, you know, and he doesn't know you're there either. So, like, he can't. Like, oh, he's right here. I'll just wrap it up and go.
The entire audience is looking at you.
Rambling while you're just standing there like an idiot, right? And then the other thing he would do jokes in your intro, you know, like during your credits or whatever. You know, he would go like, whatever. He'd go like, Adam Ray has been seen on At Midnight. Here's an interesting thing about At Midnight. I don't know if you guys have ever observed this, but he would do that in the middle of a fucking, you know, it's like, no, the time for you to do dumb jokes is done. Like, now you just bring the guy up. But he would, so like, then you'd be standing there for a minute while he bombed, like just standing on the edge of the stage.
He bombed
right?
your credits. Yeah.
Yeah, he would fucking bomb during my credits.
So wow, then, that is a new level.
Yeah. So then he would do that shit, and then I'd go, so the headliner would get off. After I got off, he would come back up and do 10 more minutes of stand-up, right? Like, the show's over. Like, I'm not trying to, it's not an ego thing. It's just like, the headliner is done, the show's done. You've already paid your checks, and then people are putting their coats on, and he's still doing fucking dumb jokes, right? Like, And he didn't have it was bad. Whatever.
No one wants to see the guitar tech come in and tune the guitar after AC/DC gets off stage.
Yeah.
Like, hey guys, I got a couple more E chords to play.
Right, exactly. Cool. And I appreciate it. I don't think it went unnoticed that you compared me to AC/DC in that joke.
Yeah, that's awesome.
No problem, thanks, man. Yeah.
Well, you are. Well, so, hey, you might. I think you're the first guy on this podcast who has ever written on the Oscars.
Oh, thanks. I am an adult man wearing shorts. So,
and that's very AC/DC. I'm a big fan of cargo shorts.
Yeah. All right, so anyway, me too. So many pockets. I don't know why people are shitty about...
gave me such a hard time at the Moon Tower Festival about wearing them.
Why wouldn't you? There's more pockets. Why wouldn't you want to carry more things?
Thank you.
It's for survival, right? Dude. Like, and I am more equipped to survive.
And
I
have... it's not a fanny pack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People who make fun of cars, fuck them. You're not you're not wrong, Dale.
Thank you.
Anyway, but you're also... I'm a 38-year-old man with an earring, so what the fuck do I know?
Oh, you know a lot. So.
Hey, Harrison Ford is a 72-year-old guy with an earring, and he was Han fucking Solo.
He's real cool. He's real cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, so here's the thing. So Dan, there's one show where he goes to bring me up, and he just rambles for 5 minutes like he does, and I stand there like an idiot on the edge of the stage. And then finally he's done with his, like, so here he is, and I think you guys are going to like him. So Jesse Joyce is coming up, and so here he comes, right? So I fucking come up, and I grab the mic, and I'm like, hey, thanks, everybody. And then I watch him, and he's right here. Oh, no. And it's like a stage. It's a high stage. It's about this high as this table. It's a good 2.5, 3 feet off the ground. He just pitches face forward off the stage, just boom, like that, right? Just falls face first fucking into somebody's martini glass, just bam, right? And his fucking dumb cane scatters out into the crowd, right? So, like, it's elsewhere now.
Like a rock skipping in the fucking
creek.
Yeah,
exactly, right? So the cane's elsewhere, and then he bolts up, and his head's bleeding, and he's like, I'm okay, right? And now everybody who's just spent the last fucking 2 days holding the dying hand of their grandpa, right, has to watch this fucking crippled kid bleed to death in front of them, right? It's the most horrifying and traumatic thing these people could get. They just wanted to come in and forget about their problems, and now there's a guy bleeding to death in front of them, right?
So like, oh my God.
Right? So fuck it. A couple audience members pick him up and help him off to the back, and some other guy brings over his cane. This whole thing takes like 4 minutes to get this guy out of the fucking light in front of the stage, and I'm just standing there like an asshole.
You're not
like,
doing material.
Like, no, of course not. I'm just standing there like, oh, I hope somebody gets Kane. Like, I don't know what to do. It's just a disaster, right? So it takes me fucking at least 10 minutes to get them settled and back in shape to fucking pay attention to comedy and forget that fiasco, right, or whatever. So then I used to do this closer. I don't even know if I was doing it at the time. Did I used to do the nail gun joke about the construction worker who killed himself with a nail gun? I don't know if you ever saw that.
That sounds really
Because I might have
really
stopped
familiar.
Doing that by all, the time we were
All I
together.
Know is when you Google your name, it's the third thing that pops up.
Oh, really? The nail gun joke?
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
It was 2000,
like,
I want to say 10 when we...
Yeah, I don't know if I was doing it then. But the point is, either way, it's a true story about this guy. And I'm not doing the joke, but I'll just tell you this bit. Right. He was working at a construction site, and he cut off his hand with a circular saw. And then that he was so out of his mind upset about it that he picked up a nail gun and tried to kill himself with it. And he shot 12 nails into his head. And then he didn't die, right? And my whole point was that's not an Uzi. Those are 12 individual decisions that you had to make on your way. Like, why didn't at 4 you go, like, I'm going to fucking try a rope or go to a hospital, right?
But or I'm working construction, so I imagine there's a roof somewhere you can chuck yourself
Yeah,
off
he
of.
Kept firing nails all the way through 12, right? So,
oh my God.
And so then I would do this act out, right? And like, where I would actually act out how long it would actually take a person, like the actual thought process of shooting 12 fucking individual nails into your brain, right?
Yeah.
And that would always get a big laugh. It was a closer. And a lot of times, if it was a really good crowd, it would get an applause break because it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
It was act out, right? And it was a funny thing, and act outs always do well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I get an applause break on this fucking nail gun bit, but I have three like crucial punchlines at the end to call back to it and tie it together, wrap it up in a nice little bow, and get the fuck off stage, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's how my closer works. It's like, so then, because the real punch, so they just laugh at the closer, the applause break, and then I reveal the piece of information that I kept from them, which is the fact that the truth of the story is that they went to the hospital and they were able to reattach the guy's hand, but they couldn't remove all the nails from his head. So now he still has nails in it. So anyway, the whole gist of the joke is that we're going to get a plaque and hang it from his head that says I'm the biggest dick in the world because he has a nail or stuff. Whatever. So that was the joke. And I need those punchlines to get out so I can get off stage and say goodnight, thank you, right?
Yeah.
And so The point is, I do the act out part, gets a big applause break, huge round of applause. That fucking dipshit just hears people applauding, assumes that I'm done, and just climbs up on stage and tries to grab the mic from me, right? So now I'm like wrestling with a blind guy on stage where I'm like, no, I'm not done with the joke. I still have more of the joke. So don't. And by the way, he's got a big fucking bandage around his head with like a red... like a red badge of courage that he's wearing. Right?
It's almost like this is what the guy looked like.
Yeah. Like this cartoonish, like MASH style head injury that he has. You know what I mean? So like this turban with a red fucking blood stain in the middle of it. So here's the thing. He doesn't want to risk falling back off the stage again. So he's not going anywhere. So like he just fucking stands there next to me while I phone in my last three dumb punchlines with just staring out into the space with his fucking stupid milky eyes. Just standing there with his fucking dumb cane while I'm like, yes, they couldn't get out of the nails out of his head, so they fucking reattached his hand, whatever, hang a nail with a plaque. Good night, everybody, whatever. And I just fucking put the mic back in the stand. I'm just like, fuck it. And I just fucking, you know, sulk away, and then he grabs the mic and does 10 more minutes. Right? So, anyway. That's my story.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that might be the funniest story I've ever heard on.
He's real bad.
Brad and I both haven't laughed like that in a long time.
Fucking
dude.
A.
It, the nerve to even, like, after all that, to keep going.
Yeah.
It almost would have been okay for you to be like, look, I need to get off on a big moment. I'm shoving you off the stage again. Just to be like, you fuck me, I'm fucking you. You're already wearing a bandage, so the blood is going to be softened already.
You got a little padding right there. It's not going to hurt you that bad.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Anyway.
Please, like, and that's something you can do to bring back the nail gun joke is just tell that story.
You know what, dude?
It's so fucking amazing.
People have told me that, like, other comics have suggested that. I tried it, like, maybe three different times in my life to do that joke on stage. And comics have a much darker sensibility.
Yeah, we do.
Of course.
No one will ever be on board a guy like me making fun of saying that, like, not all handicapped people
are inspiring. That's
inspiring.
An amazing premise, dude.
I love that premise.
Oh, my God.
But I feel like it's really hard for me to do. That's one of those jokes where I'm thinking, like, someday I can figure out a way
to pull
off.
Maybe you
got to
do an inspiring handicapped story that prefaces that.
Yeah, I
guess. Some way to, like...
Or maybe the tie-in is that now, ironically enough, the guy who reattached his hand and, like, shot 12 nails into his head, now he's an inspiration.
Yeah.
Now he's a hero.
Right, yeah.
Because he did that shit.
Yeah. Oh, but by the way, so when I used to do that joke, I don't know if you guys ever had this happen to you before, but, like, some predict... Whatever, you know, like, you have, like, two or three bits that really resonate with the crowd, no matter where they fall in your set.
Yeah.
That people always come up and reference the same two or three jokes, you know, whatever time in your set you're doing those particular bit. When I was doing that nail gun joke, people would come up to me all the time after shows and then tell me some horrific construction accident that befell their fucking brother-in-law. And it was like some just horrible story about some fucking guy who, like, got his head cut off by a bulldozer. And it's like, no, like, do you understand? Like, I had the decency to fucking fill my story with punchlines to make it palatable. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So it was always such a bummer. Like, I would be standing there, like, trying to sell my dumb CD, and, like, all these people would come up, like, I got one for you, and I knew it was coming, and they're just like, my brother-in-law got his arm hacked in half. He's got three kids. I don't know what he's going to do. You know, it's like,
no punchline.
Yeah, exactly. Of course,
right,
no punchline. It's just a fucking dumb guy who came to the show. But they couldn't wait to tell me horrific construction accidents.
This guy fell off a 10-story building, impaled on a stake in front of his kids.
Yeah. Guess
what?
He was going to go that day and sign life insurance papers. Isn't that a fucking horrific tragedy? Enjoy your night. You know, it was like, why would you tell me that?
Oh, God, man. All right. People, if you watch At Midnight and you wonder how those jokes are so fucking good, and you're like, wow, did the third lead from Chicago Fire really write that long, great bit? No.
Well, sometimes they do.
All right. Yeah. But you're very kind. But you are a writer on At Midnight, and that's why those jokes are so good.
Fuck.
That's a good story.
But thank you. Most of the time we write, like, a lot of Hardwick shit. But But thanks, man. I appreciate that.
There's a few more things we want to talk about. We got about 10 minutes left. You good?
Yeah, I'm great. Sure.
One of those, Brad mentioned it, about working with McFarlane from the Oscars.
So
that came about because of the McFarlane when he hosted the roast?
Yeah. I mean, it's all, like, I can trace every fucking cool thing that ever happened to me back to Greg. You know, I mean, it was working with Greg on the roast got me grandfathered into the roast staff when I...
Was it after that Flavor Flav one?
No, I mean, I worked with Greg exclusively until, but like it got to be this thing where I was like Greg's writing partner. And so the roast knew that and would like, you know, they started paying me and whatever. Like, so, and I would go to the roast and sit backstage with the writers and stuff. But I was Greg's guy.
Yeah.
But so then when he died, I got grandfathered into the staff, you know? So like the first staff writing job I did was for the Trump roast or whatever. And it was miserable.
Future
experience.
President
Donald
Trump.
Shut up. Stop saying it. It'll become real.
So,
real quick, I got to know, though. When you were at the roast and the situation went up, you were was it as awkward live as it was on TV?
It was way worse. They sweetened that. Like, it was so – it was such an uncomfortable bombing.
The situation from the Jersey Shore did a quote-unquote set and just bombed.
Oh, yeah. He ate shit. But the amazing thing was is that he – ate shit harder than I've ever seen a person eat shit on a stage.
And you saw the blind guy.
Yeah, and I saw a blind guy almost get decapitated by a wine glass. So afterwards, he walks off confidently. He walks off, and his manager, who's just some fucking guinea dirtbag, you know, in like a tight t-shirt and glasses, high-fives him. Like, yeah, fucking we did it. You know, because like in that world, there's like no such thing as bombing. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, yeah, we did it. We got you on television for 6 minutes. Good enough. You know what I mean? Because
like, it's like you sat back and watched a girl get punched in the face and did absolutely nothing. But and it's like, all right.
Yeah. Because
your
like,
profile's going up.
It was so weird to see like, oh, yeah, it didn't matter if he did well or not. Like, that's not even the point. The point is just
he was there.
Yeah. Right. Whatever.
Wow.
So anyway, but the point is that so it was a miserable thing trying to get like watch Larry King fuck up my jokes and stuff, you know, and watch the situation ruin jokes and shit like that.
Yeah,
so
so
that was no fun, and I complained about it, and my agent got involved, and my manager, and basically made a decision like, oh, we got to get Jesse working with a specific guy again. Like what he really did well was him and Seth.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Greg right together.
Yeah.
So they basically worked it out where it was like, you write for Seth specifically.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was like a real cool, and then he really liked what I did.
So you met with him first, right? I'm sure he wanted to like meet.
Yeah.
And
well, no, I did most of it from New York
okay.
when I was still living in New York, but I would send him just pages of jokes, and he was like, these are great, or whatever.
Awesome.
And then, yeah, and then that day we hung out, and then basically he was like, dude, you're fucking good. I'll call you. And I was like, yeah, whatever. And then
Hollywood,
Yeah, and then he did. Like a month later, he had to give a speech at Harvard, and he called me. He was like, hey, can you fucking write some jokes for me? And so I did. And then after that, I was just like one of his joke writing guys. Like,
what
for,
the fuck?
Dude, and
so for a long time, I just wrote jokes for Seth for stuff.
And
you know?
I've heard from other people that know him that he's really particular.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's like a lot of the times he would come in for those roasts, or this is a story that I've heard. You can probably back up if it's true or not. And he didn't want to accept jokes from the other writers because he's like, no, I've got my guys.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Well, I mean, I have heard that, but I never appreciate because I was always one of his guys. So I was on the inside But I mean, yeah, like when you're in the cool book with him, like you're in it, you know?
Yeah,
so like he kept reusing the same guys for a long time.
And
so.
He remembers his friends. Like you hear about these stories, like my buddy Ralph Garman, like he's in Family Guy. And, and because of that, Seth gives him a part in every movie that he does.
In some way, shape,
or form, Ralph gets a part.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's just great.
He's a great dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, because to be honest, when it was announced that he got the Oscars, because, like, I was the only guy of his guys that wasn't on staff. You know, like, everyone else was a Family Guy dude.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that, to be honest. Like, that was the thing. I just didn't want to be on Family Guy. Like, not that I don't like the show. I just didn't. I'm a comic. And that's too many hours. Like, it would impede.
Yeah.
I would not be able to do stand-up and maintain a full-time, that kind of schedule with a show like that. So,
is it also, like, that type of, I mean, you know, there's just, more, like, with At Midnight, I'm sure it's a different writer's room than it is with...
Yeah, well, with At Midnight, it's like we tape Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, that's it. Like, and then Thursday, Friday, we come in and do shit, but I could do that from a hotel, so, you know.
Yeah.
And it's all a big joke machine, and it's just comics doing the show, and I do the show a lot, and so as a result, it's a perfect avenue for a comic. It makes exact sense. It's only, like, an inch away from stand-up, so it's a perfect gig for that. Like, Family Guy doesn't necessarily help my stand-up ever, you know?
Sure,
like, it's a great show. I'm not saying anything negative about it.
It's just not exactly
I met with them,
the avenue that you want to be at.
Yeah, like, I met with them, and they're, like, more or less, it was kind of like, hey, if you'd like to work here, and I was like, I want to do stand-up. Does that fit into what you guys do? And they're like, not really. And I was like, okay, but thank you.
Yeah,
you know,
thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah,
great
it was
show,
awesome. Yeah,
yeah, just not for me.
So, but the point is that, so I was, like, the only guy who wasn't on the staff. So I figured when he got the Oscar, Oscars, there would be this thing where I would like, he would just give me whatever, a couple grand under the table to write him Oscar jokes. Mm-hmm. But then I got a call from the Oscars. Like, they're like, we're putting you on staff. Like, so like, I got the credit for doing it. Was a cool thing that he did because he didn't have to do that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
So, yeah, he's a good dude.
Is it hard to write? Because, like, you know, the Oscars, like, that's, you can't go that offensive. You got to be pretty vanilla for that.
You know what, though? I feel like that specific Oscars was kind of one of the tipping points that got us to where we are now, you know?
Yeah.
Like that boobs song and all that shit. Like the shit that, like the fucking backlash for that. I feel like that wasn't happening as much before that, you know? So I feel like we just went in and we're like, well, I'm going to, and especially me, like, it's not my job to find out where the line is. I'm just going to write jokes.
Right.
And then
kind of like the same thing you did with Greg, where it's like, I'm not performing.
Yeah,
these.
Yeah, you're the one who has to say it. So, like, I'm go just going to give you options. Yeah. Like, yeah, I will go real edgy. And then if that works for you, go ahead.
But,
like, so I wrote the Lincoln assassination joke, which I was super proud of. It bombed, but I thought it was great. And my dad was in an elevator the next day, and some lady was bitching about it. Was like, can you believe, you know, the Lincoln assassinate or whatever.
Yeah.
And my dad was very, it was like the first time my dad was like, oh, I get what it does.
Was he like proud of that?
Yeah, he was. Okay. He was very proud of it, especially because it's like I brought up the Lincoln assassinate because my dad's a big history dork. So like the fact
that nice.
Pulled that. I got John Wilkes Booth to trend worldwide on Twitter because of that joke.
Come on. Who else can say that? Where are you at now, Kresgen?
Or John Wilkes Booth, right?
I mean, I'm sure the family of John Wilkes Booth is very it's very happy for you.
I think they all changed their names. Actually, did you know his brother was a famous actor? It, like, ruined his career. Like,
what? You think?
There's a statue of Edwin Booth in New York City. There's one of the Broadway theaters, one of the big ones, that has, like, I don't know what's playing there right at the moment, but it's probably, like, Book of Mormon or something. Like,
yeah.
One of the theaters.
Oh,
it's called the Booth Theater. It's named after Edwin Booth, who was John Wilkes Booth's brother.
I actually just saw a show there 3 weeks ago.
What'd you see?
The American Psycho musical.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that's the Booth. That's named after John Wilkes Booth's brother.
No shit.
Yeah, and it fucking ruined his career. Like, and then
the fact that people go to a theater that's named after the guy's brother who killed Lincoln in a theater?
Well, that's the thing. He was super famous. It's like the equivalent of, like, Billy Baldwin killing the president. You know what I mean?
Really?
Like, yeah, because his but if Alec Baldwin was our most treasured actor, you know what I mean? So the analogy's a little bad, but
let's be honest, it would be Steven.
Yeah, well, if there's a dumber Hemsworth, it would be that one. It'd be like if that Hemsworth killed the president, right? And then it would just ruin the other, because there was another brother, too. Like, there was a whole acting
dynasty. Not Chris,
dynasty.
Not Liam, but Danny Hemsworth.
Yeah, Danny Hemsworth. Fucking Gomez Hemsworth kills the president. The fucking Gomez ruined it for everybody. So, anyway.
Oh, what a great experience.
Brett, there's one other thing that Brett told me in doing some research, and this is, and I had this come up in Austin when we were leaving each other at Moon Tower. I probably would have had you change your flight so we could continue the discussion. What? This is how interested I am in this.
Uh-huh.
He taxidermy.
Oh yeah,
you're into it. You're fascinated by it. What is your connection?
You know what? To be honest with you, I think what it stems from is that I really dig animals, right? Like, I think they're really neato. I like going to zoos. I love natural history museums, right?
Hell yeah.
I love the shit
out of
zoos. I go to natural history museums in every city I go to, right?
No kidding.
And the thing, and I like zoos, but the problem is the animals are not cooperative. You know what I mean?
Oh, dude,
you go to a zoo and you're like, I just want to look at this fucking tiger, and this fucking tiger is like wedged in the corner.
Dude, I have a whole bit about that. Have you ever taken the tour at the San Diego Zoo?
I've never taken the tour, but I walked around the San Diego Zoo.
It's the worst because these tour guides, they still call out the animals like they're there, and none of them are there.
Oh,
so
right.
They scramble.
Right.
They're like, if you look off to your left, you'll see two of our most famous hippopotamuses. We actually just got them in from Africa, Ginny and Janie, and they're Well, we'll circle back around. Google the picture. It's the same fucking thing. But the animals don't give a fuck that we're there.
Yeah.
So they make, you have to go on the right day that they all are just like, you know what?
Like in the morning. That's when you got to go to zoos.
You're right.
Up and like, because by afternoon, it's too hot. They fuck
off. It's too hot.
Sleep. But the point is, taxidermy allows one to just, I have a moose head, for example, right?
Do you name it?
Sit there and fucking look at that moose, and he won't go anywhere. You know what I mean? It sounds like a Jeffrey Dahmer serial killer instinct.
A little bit.
But, like, I like the moose.
Is it calming?
To be honest, here's the thing. My whole office looks like a 19th century explorers club.
That's,
you know what
awesome.
I mean? That's what it looks like, for real. Like, I'll show you pictures after.
Like treasure maps and shit?
Yeah. I got like an ancient, like an old-timey map, but I put in all the pins of places I've done stand-up, right? Like,
that's incredible, map, right? Though.
That's awesome.
And then, yeah. And so, like, as part of it, it just really fits the theme, you know what I mean, to have all this taxidermy and whatever. I just think it's super cool. And I just always liked it since I was a little kid. And then now that I you know, do all right financially, and I don't drink.
By the way, I love that you're like constituting, doing well, being like, I can afford a moose head and not think twice about it.
That's the exact thing. Is like, I don't drink anymore. It doesn't hurt anybody. Like, fuck it. I'm going to, and because here's the thing. I don't kill anything. Right. I want to make that clear. Yeah. And also, I don't go to a taxidermist to get it, right? I buy it from people who don't know any better on eBay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm really fucking super good at it, of shopping for it on eBay. Because, here's the thing, there's like three categories of people, and I will show you exactly what I mean.
Okay.
There, on eBay, there are there's the kind of people who are taxidermists professionally, and they totally know what they're doing. And those guys are preying on the dipshits on eBay who don't know what they're doing, so they overcharge the shit out of stuff, right?
Okay.
Then there are the guys who – this is – all right, I found it, right? So they overcharge. Then there are the guys who don't know what they have and just go, I don't know, $15,000. And it's like, go fuck yourself. Yeah, like, do a little research. Yeah, that's not worth $15,000. The yang of that guy, the polar opposite, is the dude who has no idea what the thing he has. And he is just this cuckolded bitch husband whose wife has been like, get that fucking thing out of the basement for like 15 years. And then finally he's like, fuck, all right, Dolores, I'll put it on eBay, right? But he never bothers to see how much it's worth, so he just fucking puts it up for some dumb, some like real low price, and then I just fucking swipe it, right?
Yeah.
So here's exactly what I mean. This is an elk. For a while there, I wanted an elk. I don't want to. I'm not getting an elk, but I did it for a while. See that? See how much that elk costs? It's $3,000, right? Yeah. Or $5,000 to buy it now.
Okay.
Go fuck yourself, dude. That is not. Then look at this one, right? Here is the same basic elk head, $500. Or 700 buy it now. That's the kind of guy who doesn't know what he's doing.
Okay.
Because he's got a wife who's bitching at him. And you know how I know he's got a wife that's bitching at him? Because she's in the fucking picture bitching at him. You see what I mean?
Oh my God.
Fucking woman. Like, I saved these two pictures as
dressed
a perfect
like
example
Weekend at Bernie's.
To explain exactly what I mean about how I'm good at taxing. This fucking, I know that this guy has no idea what he's doing.
She's literally mid-sentence being like, are you taking a picture of
finger,
me?
She's pointing a finger. Like, are you taking, get rid of this fucking, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I've also, there's another one I found of like an African eland, and in the description it was like, my wife doesn't want this in the house anymore, and it was like, I got it now.
They don't know the damage they're doing by being that honest.
All you gotta do is just look, just fucking Google what they're worth. Like, you know, I like $2,000 for a moose head, or I mean for an elk, totally reasonable, right? But that guy doesn't know that he's only selling it for $500, so I just fucking grab that shit.
It's like the people that don't, you know, look through all the flight sites. They just go straight to Expedia and they just fucking book off that.
Yeah.
There's other options.
Yeah. So anyway, you guys should come over to my house sometime. I'm so proud of my office. It's like my favorite place to be.
Now, like, do you have like, is it just in the one room of the house, or is it
spread? My wife has mostly sequestered it to just my office, right? To be honest, this is the whole reason I got a guest house in my when I bought a house.
Pretty dope that you own a house, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. Man, I'm excited about
it. That's really.
I wanted a place with a guest house specifically so I could turn that little teeny house into like a miniature, like fucking explorers club. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the way Hardwick described. Hardwick and I have the exact same aesthetic sensibility, which is a coincidence.
Yeah.
But he describes it perfectly. It's a 19th century, or it's Victorian serial killer. Because that's exactly what my style is, right?
That's
it's Victorian
amazing.
Serial killer.
I mean, and that should be your username on Instagram.
Yeah. So.
But and now I have just so much more respect for you and the fucking blind guy story.
Might
be the best story
ever. The blind guy story is amazing. I don't know if you're going to try that on stage again, but maybe another 10 years.
I got a second worst MC story, too, that we could save.
Ooh, part two.
Podcast.
Part two.
Save for part two.
You are welcome back anytime.
Cool.
This was amazing.
This is really fun. Yeah. I love doing it.
And,
I'll do it again.
And please just never add a dwarf head to your collection.
Good night, everybody.
Tell them that brand.
Night Podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.